Some of what you are about to hear might be deemed offensive by some people. If you are insulted by people arguing about the New England Patriots and pretty much anything else, or by subjects like soap with a slot, gutter cleaners, people with big heads, Bill Polian, Egypt, wedge salads, and drilling for oil, you probably shouldn't listen to PFW in Progress. But if you do listen and hear something questionable, please do not be offended. We're just trying to entertain. In other words, some of the content of PFW in Progress may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
Gentlemen, you are the top 1%.
The elite. Best of the best. We'll make it better.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to our commanding officer at Top Gun. The very first man to win the Top Gun trophy. You will not find a finer fighter pilot anywhere in the world.
Paul Perillo.
I will fire when I am good and ready. You get that?
And Andy. And Andy?
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Andy Hart.
You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right.
I am dangerous.
Eric Scalavino.
I want somebody's butt. I want it now. I'm at it.
For now, anyway.
Hex twice. I want some butt.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Hey, gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for. You are America's best. Make us proud.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. It's a lot more empty studio than it was Tuesday. It was a packed house. Tuesday, but today it's myself, Paul, Eric, Doc's in the booth, Tacoma's roaming around somewhere.
Right? It's giving tours.
Giving tours. So,
where's the cake?
What cake?
Messing up food orders. Paul, where's the cake? There's no cake with lunch today.
The cake?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be cake today for Freddie's birthday?
Should be, right?
Today's my birthday.
Isn't today your birthday?
Isn't it?
Are we wrong on that?
I don't know. Doesn't matter. I don't celebrate.
What do you know? Also, 55?
Also, Bob Doyle's birthday, right?
Yes, Bob and...
Happy birthday.
Formerly under the umbrella
Bob
of Fred
Doyle
Kirsch.
And I share a birthday. That's correct. Yeah. So, anyway, what's going on, guys?
Are you depressed?
Huh?
You depressed?
No, I'm not depressed. Why do you think I'm depressed?
You sounded dejected when we brought up your birthday.
It's who cares? Who really gives a crap?
We do.
No.
PFW in Progress.
Yes.
I'm telling you, they're going to care.
No.
They're going
to
bring
We need
it.
Some sort of dessert to celebrate your birth.
Maybe some Kirsch liqueur.
Okay. That's what you want?
You know what that is, of course, right?
I don't, actually, Fred.
What?
I don't.
It's cherry liqueur.
Kirsch?
Kirsch. Is
brand cherry. Name? Is that a brand name?
It's a brand name, but it's also the German word for cherry.
Oh, Fred, are you going to...
Did not know that.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
Are you going to go... Wow, we have a lot of guests. So
no,
much for that
so
empty
So much for
studio.
The empty studio you were preaching about.
Come on
about.
In, everybody.
Wow. More guests.
Wow.
I thought... Wow.
Man, this is more than the other day. My goodness.
Who's the guy with the Red Sox shirt? That's
I don't
not.
Know.
That's not going to go over well here.
How did he get past security?
We got...
Nick, thank you. Kevin, Kevin Couture.
Nick and Kevin.
Oh, okay.
Right?
All
and
right.
Nick. Well, Nick, thanks for lunch.
Yeah, thanks
and,
a lot.
Is this your whole family that you brought with you?
Why don't we get you on a mic?
Your aunt and uncle? Okay. And who are these two people?
This is my wife, Kirsten.
Oh, that's with Nick. So there's two separate groups.
Two groups.
Nick is on leave from the Coast Guard.
Kevin,
I'm sorry.
That's Kevin. That's yeah. Nick.
Kevin, I'm
Fred,
alone.
Fred's,
it's his
Fred's officially old today.
It's his birthday.
So
he's a little off his game.
Kevin's on leave from the Coast Guard, so he's here with his family. And Nick is a listener. How long have you been listening, Nick?
I've been listening about 2006.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. So where are you from?
I'm from Hawaii.
Hawaii?
Yeah.
Wow, all the way from Hawaii.
He's freezing.
That's cool. I got a guy.
So
I got a guy there that I need you to find and take care of for me.
Oh, come on. Let's not bring up that.
Okay.
Fred.
I won't. What?
I know we want to hear.
All right. So how's your tour so far?
Really great. We just got here, so hopefully we'll see a lot more.
Okay. You're going to go to the hall and all that stuff?
Yeah. I've been once before, but I'd like to
go
through
go
it again.
Again.
Great.
It's worth it.
Absolutely. Well, it's good having everyone.
Yeah.
So what were we talking about?
Well, I want to know more about the
kids.
Yeah,
we have the other group, too.
Oh, okay. Kids.
Come here.
You want to go on the radio? What's your name?
Kaylin.
Kaylin.
And why are you here today? Who are you here with?
My dad, my brother, and my mom.
Is Kaylin always so quiet? Yeah. Okay.
And what's your brother's name?
Cameron.
Okay.
Cameron, why don't you come over here now? Cameron, does your dad say that you have to be a Patriots fan, or if you don't, you have to go mow the lawn?
Sure.
Okay, sure.
That, you should say that to your son.
Does he let you watch the Patriots? Or
I was just
going
to say, does he have to do chores?
I know.
He makes me watch both.
That's pretty cool. He does let him watch both. I like that.
That's good. All right.
I've broken my microphone, friend. I'm out for the rest of the show.
Why can't you go to EEI and break their
underneath
microphones?
There you go.
Because then he wouldn't get invited to the whinies.
They pay.
We don't. Paul's here on the, you know, goodwill.
Gracing us with his presence.
No, lunch. I'm here for lunch. No, it's Paul, back. I didn't break it. It's back.
You were on the EI yesterday.
I was.
Yeah. How did that go?
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was okay.
Any arguments?
No, just making fun of Glenn a little bit.
Yeah.
He didn't like that.
I heard about that.
Yeah, that's about all.
Yeah. That's
but,
good.
Virtually no Patriots talk.
Well, you know, it's that time of year.
The only thing we talked about was Julius Peppers signing his franchise tender.
This is something I want to clear up for everybody, that we've gotten emails that now that he signed his franchise tender, that's it. He's off the market. Absolutely not.
No, you can trade for
him. Yeah, there's nothing has changed for anyone who wants to sign
right.
or is interested in signing Julius Peppers. Nothing has changed.
He's no more off the market than he was 2 days ago when he hadn't signed
it. If you did a deal with Julius Peppers, let's just say that they had worked out something with his agent prior to him. He would then have to go sign it anyway.
Right.
And then you could execute the deal. So nothing has changed.
Well, you'd have
changed.
To work it out with Carolina.
I understand that, but you still have to do
yeah.
that. Nothing has
no,
changed.
Fred is right.
You know,
yeah, nothing has.
So those
nothing
who
has
still,
changed. It's not any better or worse chances of him
right.
being dealt.
Those who still hold out hope that they might get him,
like Eric.
Yeah, nothing has changed. They could. Still
I admit
get
the door is closing though.
Oh, it's closing.
Well, I think it's because it's gone so far. I think that you know.
Yeah, like you guys talked about on Tuesday, the longer you wait, the harder it would be for a team that wants to acquire him to be prepared to do so in
right.
terms of having that amount of cap space.
Absolutely. So
it's a matter of their Toyota. You know you screwed up my order today. First time you messed up the order. This is Andy's order.
No, I got it for you because you didn't email me.
I've never ordered a chicken parm calzone. Not that fat guy is not going to eat it, because I will.
I got you a chicken parm sub.
That's not a chicken parm sub,
oh,
though.
Oh, well, this is not a chicken parm sub. This is a calzone.
I don't know what you want me to tell you.
So
don't
I
give him a hard time,
calzone, is what you're telling
he never screws up our lunch orders.
That's
don't
why,
give him a hard time.
That's why I have to give him a hard time.
No.
It might be my bad.
No.
Don't take the blame.
It's not your
blame.
I already know what he did. He didn't wait to see what I wanted. He ordered without asking me. It's not Nick's fault.
No,
don't blame this on Nick.
He obviously was paying attention because I really...
So I took your
yeah.
calzone is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Such an angry man.
I got you a chicken parm sub because you didn't answer fast enough to me.
So you punished him.
Yes,
by getting him something he's never ordered before.
And.
Wow.
The chicken parm calzone.
This is your
great,
calzone, isn't it?
No, I got the right. I'm good.
Whose calzone is this? Whose food am I eating?
Yours.
You just said you got me a chicken parm sub.
Oh, my God. They gave you the wrong thing.
Oh, that's not true.
I think, Paul, you're onto something.
Boring.
Hey, listen. This is twice now. He screwed it up on you last week, right?
That's true. That's true.
I actually automatically thought that Doc must have ordered the
But
food
he must today. Have been paying attention because I threw
no
him
offense.
A curveball. Instead of my usual
Thanks.
Cheeseburger, I got a chicken teriyaki sub, and he got it right. So he was obviously paying attention.
How was it?
Well, evidently, you must have ordered it. Did you order it last night?
Yeah.
Because 9 o'clock, I guess, is a little too late to get your order in, I guess, now. It was the one day in like 3 weeks that I've actually been on time for work because there wasn't really much traffic today.
Yeah.
And evidently... wasn't soon enough.
Anyway.
Hey, Fred.
Yeah.
I was just told that you didn't have the chicken teriyaki.
What do you mean?
You ate Brian's barbecue chicken.
That was teriyaki. And it said it right on it, chicken teriyaki.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, that would have
been
great.
He stands corrected and can't taste what he's eating.
Yeah. No, it said right on it, chicken teriyaki, and it tasted like chicken teriyaki.
That would have been classic, though.
So
what is the occasion for all of our guests today? What specifically about this time of year?
Yeah. Nick's here from Hawaii.
Well, I know, but so why, you know, what do you...
Do you know Jake Ingram?
by the way?
Yeah, actually, I'm the one of the managers for the football team, and one of my duties, like, during practice is to kind of help out with special teams. So
oh, cool.
I'm, like, actually pretty good friends with him.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
So, yeah, like, when he was drafted, I was pretty excited.
You sent us an email when he was drafted. I remember.
Does he know you're in town?
Nope. I didn't really want to talk to him. I figured he'd probably – I just let him focus on trying to make the team.
This is their downtime.
Yeah, well, that tells you about PFW right in progress, though. He didn't really want to talk to the players. He wanted to come in here and talk to us.
Sure. There you go.
Get lunch.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
No, that's – I didn't realize that. I now, as soon as you started saying about the manager, I remember the email that you sent right after we drafted him. So that's pretty cool. We have someone on the inside. We'll have to tap you for information during the season if Jake makes it.
Yeah.
Because you'll call Jake, and you'll find out what the game plan is, and you tell us on Wednesdays, and then we'll be able to...
Sound like we know what we're talking
about.
His game plan would just be snap it good.
Yeah, he's in the locker.
Well, you know, but you hear things. To meetings, you have, you know, playbooks and stuff.
Yeah, I'll keep you updated then.
All right.
Sure, all the little scuttlebutt.
So you're going to be working for the Hawaii team this year, too?
Yeah, I've been working there about... I'm about to start my second season as one of the managers and about to fly back in less than a week and start work again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a lot of preseason preparation, like equipment managers have to do.
Sure, yeah.
And then we got our camp starting soon, so I'll be there just working a lot.
Now, they have cool uniforms, don't they?
Hawaii, yeah. Yes.
I like that.
Yeah,
like
we recently got an Under Armour sponsor last year when we switched from Nike, so... We got all of their stuff. They redesigned our uniforms. Pretty nice now.
Nice.
Yep.
Now, do the guys get to wear their own cleats, or they have to wear Under Armour cleats?
They have to wear Under Armour cleats. We had Nike for a while, and like some of the guys didn't really like the change. I kind of know a few of the guys started to wear like Nike in practice, and the coach would yell at them because we're Under Armour sponsors. I want to be showing off Nike.
Because he's getting kickbacks, and you know.
Yeah, so I think pretty much everybody's adjusted to Under Armour now.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
You can throw the headphones on, too, if you want.
That's interesting.
In case Doc plays something.
I doubt it, because usually he's just playing solitaire and stuff back there, not paying attention.
Now, Kevin.
I haven't done that once.
Kevin Couture, where are you from?
I'm from Connecticut originally.
You're from Connecticut. Whereabouts?
Griswold.
Okay.
Griswold, Connecticut.
How long have you been at the Coast Guard?
He's not on a microphone right now, Fred.
So Kevin, you can jump on that
mic. So while you're in the same room as he is and you can hear his answers, you know. The hundreds of thousands of people listening can't hear.
All right, snarky Paul.
Hit that little red button there.
Yeah.
There you go.
How long have you been in the Coast Guard?
I've been in Coast Guard about 10 and a half years.
10 and a half years. So have you got into any, like, sea battles with druggies?
Sea battles, like it's a game.
We got a few drug busts back when I was on the Gallatin down in Charleston.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Was that you know... What was that like? You know, did you have to board their ship? And,
yes, sir.
And
sometimes you'd be on a boarding for 10 hours or so at a time. Sometimes you're intercepting Haitian or some other country's immigrants and stuff like that. Those things take a lot of time.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, they focus on the, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. But the Coast Guard, especially, you know, protecting our coast, obviously, they play a big role here. There's a lot of threat beyond... You know, the stuff that gets the news all the time. So you guys do a great job. We appreciate it.
I appreciate that.
Sure. Now, how long have you been a Patriots fan?
Unofficially, since
week three. Week three of 2001.
No, it was kind of corny. It's when they had that really lousy music video back in 1985 to rebut the.
Oh, really?
Super Bowl Shuffle.
Bury
video.
The Bears.
Oh, that was a terrible video.
Was that awful? V66. Bury the Bears.
Officially, when my dad took me to my first game. I know Bledsoe was here. It was in the 90s, the old Foxborough Stadium, and it was an overtime game against Miami where Miami won with a field goal. But
Paul would know.
Freezing our butt off out there on the old aluminum bleachers.
Well, wasn't the first year because they beat them in overtime the first year that Bledsoe was here. That last second pass in overtime?
I bet you it was 99.
No, I was around 14, 15 at the time. So okay. That was 93, 92.
He was drafted in 93.
He was drafted in 93.
It was about 2 days after Christmas.
2 days
and
after?
And you sure they lost in overtime?
I don't know. Now you're making me doubt myself.
It would be before Bledsoe.
Yeah, because his rookie year, Bledsoe's rookie year, they beat the Dolphins in overtime, the last game of the season. Yeah. It was a Bledsoe touchdown pass.
Yeah, I bet it was 92, and it was the year before Bledsoe
if they lost in overtime to Miami. So that's the kind of insignificant nonsense that sticks in my head. Anything of any value, gone.
Yeah,
don't remember any of that.
By mistake, because my dad's a Giants fan. Yeah.
Last game of the season in 1992, December 27th, two days after Christmas, 16-13 overtime loss at home against Miami.
Who was the QB?
It would have been
Hugh Millen.
Someone in the illustrious past of Hugh Millen, Scott Zolak, Tommy Hodson, Cody Carlson, or whatever the Jeff Carlson.
Yeah.
The four different quarterbacks played for the Patriots that year. That's unbelievable.
Probably Hugh Millen.
It's so long. All I remember is Dan Marino was on the field.
Yeah. All right. So have you been to the hall yet?
No, we're heading there next.
Okay,
actually.
You're gonna love it. Yeah, there's something for the kids. Mm-hmm. You can actually kick a field goal.
There's a lot of interactive stuff with the kids. They'll really enjoy it. Pretty actually, cool. PFW spent about 2 hours over there last week. So you can measure your vertical jump with Lawrence Maroney, and you can get on a scale with Vince Wilfork. You kick a field goal with Adam Vinatieri.
You
get in the huddle with Tom Brady.
Go head-to-head with Teddy Bruschi.
So
the line of scrimmage.
There's a lot of interactive stuff that's really cool, and you know you don't have to be a kid to enjoy it because, like I said, wasted at least 2 hours over there.
And then at the end of it, you go into the pro shop, and that's where mom and dad spend all their money.
Fred,
ever the capitalist.
Well, you know.
What's your little sarcastic comment on
that? I just want to know which one of you guys had the best vertical leap.
Andy.
The head helps, huh?
He also had, when he got on the scale, Wilfork has a snarky comment for everybody, and he said, wow, you're really top heavy. I'm serious.
No, he did. He did, because they put like a little picture comparison of what your weight is.
With the picture of Pat Patriot.
Pat Patriot, and it said, this guy's weight is all in his head. And
This guy's weight's all in his head.
But yeah, I think Andy's vertical was like 121. I think mine was 118, and Paul's was 115. But it's weird, because you can't bend down and jump.
Well, that's a vertical.
Because they've got, but they've got these little like laser sensors. So any part of your body that hits that before you jump,
what if
it
you start
registers
low?
It.
And
I just
go up.
I just went
as soon
I
as
think
it,
you're out,
I don't
if you're
know.
Out of the beam or whatever. But I just meant with the fact that I'm old and fat. That's why mine was so small.
Eric, did you make the field goal in the snow?
No, we all missed.
No,
wait, you didn't even make the field goal in the hall.
It was an embarrassment.
35 yards.
No.
Now I know why you backed out of that.
I didn't back
we
out.
All, we
Mr.
All
Pro is the one who backed
you
out.
You backed out.
We
he
all missed,
the
but at least mine
he didn't
was
show
online.
Up. I did my end.
You backed out.
I did my part. Where's number three?
You did
Where
your
is
part.
He?
You went out
Where
one day
he,
in North Providence
Where?
And kicked
no,
field goals
one day,
for the
one
snow.
Day. I did it for 2 months.
Realized he wasn't going to make too many.
Right.
And stopped pressing the issue.
Exactly.
I came out here. I said what I did. Where's Gostkowski? Where is he?
He's supposed
he's
to
a
write.
Punk.
He's not supposed to kick.
He's supposed to write.
We'll get him.
He's done nothing.
We'll get him, and you're going to do
he's
this.
He's done nothing.
You're going to do this
He'll
after
do
one of the training camp practices.
We're not going to do anything. We're too busy at that time.
You're going to do it.
No, we're not.
Why? See, he doesn't want
to
do it.
We have work to do now once training camp starts. We can't make
well,
type of these shenanigans.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
That's why the offseason was
one fun. Of the days, instead of your one-hour walkabout, you can do this.
Can't
okay?
do that during training
you
camp,
can sacrifice
Fred. We're busy during training camp.
You can
camp.
Sacrifice a little walkabout that you do on the concourse here. Do you have a walking stick when you do that? When you take your little
not
daily
here.
Walk?
No, I have one
a
at home, though. I should bring it in.
Little canteen and a compass.
At home, yeah.
You don't
I have
get
that.
Lost.
Yeah.
I can see. You wear one of those like hats, you know, with the wide brim so mm-hmm. the sun doesn't, you know.
I have one of those. Yeah,
yeah I could see that. Yeah. You know, sunscreen, like, you know, 150 sunscreen.
50 plus.
You know, that's good.
Well, I need it for, you know.
Absolutely.
Kevin knows what I'm talking about, right? Can't get the sunburn up there.
That's right. All right, well.
But you see how he looks normal? It's all shaved and he looks normal?
Yeah.
I don't have a normal looking head like that. I can't do it.
I think you could.
I think you could,
I
can't.
I think you could.
I don't
You've
have
never
any.
Never done
I don't
it, though, so
hair.
You wouldn't know. Just try it once. Yours will grow back.
Yeah, I know, because it's really growing now, isn't it?
It will. You've got enough on the sides.
I cracked a duck up from the other
no,
side of the glass.
Those strands of hair have been
I'm right
with
there
him
with
since
you, Paul.
He was in high school. he just hasn't cut them off yet.
Maybe college.
Maybe college.
I didn't realize I had a budding problem when I was in high school.
Oh. All you got to do is look at your dad, and then you see this what I'm going to be.
My brother's got a full head of hair.
Does he?
I was told it skips a generation, that it's you get basically what your grandfather had.
I was told it was from your mother's side because all
right.
my uncles are balding.
Exactly.
And
however,
and my grandfather on my mother's side
is exactly like
bald,
my dad's.
Was bald.
Right. My dad has the exact same pattern, unfortunately.
Well, maybe you look at his mother, you know, I don't know.
My mom's grandmother was
one of the worst 25 minutes we've ever put in.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break right now. We want to thank everyone for coming in. I know you guys need to get on your tour or go to the hall and do your stuff, get some lunch, whatever. But we thank everyone for coming in. Nick, thanks for lunch.
Yeah, mahalo.
No problem.
Oh, you are so pompous.
And Kevin, thank you for your service.
Oh, you're
all right. We'll be right back.
For pride, honor, and victory, the time has come to defend our trophy, Superliga 2009. The rivalry continues. New England Revolution versus Atlas, Sunday, June 28th, 4:30 p.m. at Gillette Stadium. For tickets, call 1-877-GET-REVS or go to revolutionsoccer.net.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
In a summer filled with concerts, one band will light the sky like no other.
For the first time ever outdoors in New England, Gillette Stadium proudly welcomes AC/DC. Live in concert, July 28th. AC/DC. July 28th, Gillette Stadium. Tickets are on sale now for AC/DC at Ticketmaster.com, the Gillette Stadium box office, or 1-800-745-3000. The one concert you cannot miss. AC/DC at Gillette Stadium. Presented by Live Nation.
One passion, one cup, one chance to see it. The 2009 CONCACAF Gold Cup. Watch three top-class matches for the price of one. Saturday, July 11th, 4 p.m. at Gillette Stadium. Revolution versus Kansas City Wizards. United States versus Haiti and Honduras versus Grenada. Call 1-877-GET-REVS or go to goldcup.org. That's 1-877-GET-REVS or goldcup.org. The 2009 CONCACAF Gold Cup. Don't miss it.
And now, great moments in PFW in progress history.
Richard, this is going to sound like a deep question, but
doubt it coming from you.
Are we going to see real-world economics kind of get into the game of football and in any way limit the finances of football? I mean, it's hard to say this year with Albert Haynesworth getting potentially $100 million. But, I mean, have you thought about that at all, or had any discussions with your representatives?
We're going to bring in the stimulus package. We're going to stimulate the economy. So with all the stimulus going on, I'm sure it'll be enough for us for the primetime players out there.
Very good answer. That's a good answer.
Yeah, no questions.
That's another great moment from PFW in Progress.
All right, welcome back to PFW in Progress. Our guests are now off on their tour, but it was nice of them to stop in. That's nice to actually meet the fans. You know, Nick came all the way from Hawaii.
Yep.
Kevin came all the way up from Connecticut with his whole family.
Last year at this time, we had a few visitors too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is the
right time
to do it.
It's the right time.
So for those of you who want to complain, you know.
That's why I was asking what the occasion was. Nick coming all the way from Hawaii. And,
yeah.
I mean, I know his aunt and uncle were here.
Plus he bought us lunch.
If there was any particular reason. It's a good thing Andy wasn't here, though, because it is nice to meet
meet and greet some of the fans once in a while. But if Andy was here, things could get ugly.
Yeah.
You know, people might come. We might have to have higher security measures and stuff.
That's right.
I mean, we hate him and all, but he's our Andy. We don't want anybody to pick him off.
Yeah. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the phone number.
Okay?
And,
You need a moment?
What do you got over there, Eric? What are you eating?
I got the signature turkey sandwich from Pizzeria Grande.
Did they give you the orange, too?
No, I brought that with me.
Brought that with you?
Yeah. Where'd you get that orange?
I got that at the supermarket.
Did you stop at a supermarket?
Paul. Yeah, got that at the supermarket.
Okay.
Where'd you get that water?
TG says, I'm with you, Fred. Screw birthdays. Who gives a crap? After your 21st, there's no reason to celebrate. One day closer to death. Why would you want to be reminded? Okay, I've tried to get this question in before, last attempt. It looks like the NFC and AFC East divisions are going to be the most competitive this upcoming season. Do you guys see two teams making the playoffs from both of these two divisions? If so, which teams? AFC East, Pats and Dolphins? NFC East, Eagles and Giants?
I think the Giants will make it. I think the Giants are going to be the NFC rep in the Super Bowl at this point. And I would say, I'm going to go with the Cowboys if I go with another team from that division.
Yeah, I think you have a chance for three in that division because I agree with Eric. I think the Cowboys are going to have a big bounce back. I think they have a combination working for them. First of all, they only didn't make the playoffs last year because Romo missed a few games. They underachieved, no doubt. They lost games with him and without him that they probably shouldn't have lost. But I think they have that motivating factor that teams need. And right now they're rallying around the fact that T.O. is gone, and we're going to show everybody that he hurt us, didn't help us.
Yep.
And I think that's, you know, whenever you have professional guys that are motivated by one singular thing and they all agree on it, I think that can work well. Now, they have to make sure they agree on it because I'm sure there are factions in there that, you know, like Terrence Newman, who talked about,
right.
You know, in defense. They need to make sure they're all on the same page and use it for them and then get off to a good start. I think it's imperative that Romo gets off to a good start. But I think that they have a chance to get three teams in that division. I'm not sold on the AFC East at all. I think the Patriots are clearly the class of the division.
I think Miami could make it.
I think they'll win the division by at least three or four games. I kind of like the North. I like Pittsburgh. I like Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I think the other two teams will be better. I don't think they'll be playoff better, Cincinnati and Cleveland, but I think they'll both be better. I think that'll be a very competitive division.
It could be. I mean, there's a lot of ifs. You know, if Tennessee can be as good as they were last year.
If Tennessee's as good as they were last year, then I think you have a great chance to have two out of that division
as
well.
Right. So you don't know. But getting back to the Cowboys, here's my take on the Cowboys. You know, there's always been a lot of distractions playing for the Dallas Cowboys. They overcame a lot of those distractions in the past because they just had such great talent and such a great offensive line. You know, they just, you know, they could overcome those distractions. Now, T.O.'s gone. He was a big distraction. But I really think that playing in Dallas might be tougher than playing in New York, football-wise, and for any sport.
Because of the expectations?
Because of the expectations, because of the owner. You know, the owner, I think the owner in and of himself is a distraction. I think the way he handles that team.
I think from a football standpoint, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's tougher to play in Dallas than New York. Now, I would say it's harder to play in the Yankees than the Cowboys.
See, that's where I'm saying it might even be tougher to play.
No, I don't think anything's tougher than playing for the Yankees.
Oh, I don't know because here's the thing. The Yankees can go and just spend money as much as they want. In Dallas, you can't do that because of the salary cap. You know, so you have the same expectations, but not always necessarily the best roster. And I think then you factor in the coach that they've got now, who isn't really a authoritarian. He's not a disciplinarian. You got the owner who is also the GM, who's in and out of that locker room. You know,
it's, on the field, during games.
He's a separate channel to voice your grievances if you're a player. You don't necessarily have to go to the coach. You can go to the, you know, I just think all those things add up to.
It's lessening now because Steinbrenner is further and further out of the picture. But during Steinbrenner's reign,
that was tough.
Every bit as bad as Jerry Jones and worse.
Yeah, I'll give you
that. He wasn't the GM on paper, but he was the GM.
I,
he dictated not only who was on the team, but where they batted, where they played.
I, I will give
firing
you
firing managers left and right during the season. It was a more difficult place.
Right now,
maybe
this,
right now with George Steinbrenner out of the picture.
Yeah.
Maybe Dallas has supplanted them, but I mean, from a football, are you talking about the Giants or the Jets? That's nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing.
There's nothing to playing football for the Giants or Jets compared to Dallas.
Right. Yeah.
Not even close.
And so for all those reasons, I say that, you know, they're never a lock to make the playoffs, you know, let alone win a game in the playoffs, just because of all those distractions. Because it's really, you know, they don't have the solid foundation of a program that, you know, even the Eagles have. You know, the Eagles are able to sustain success, I think, with less talent than the Cowboys.
They definitely have. I think overall they have less talent than the Cowboys.
You know?
But, yeah, they have a better coach.
They have a better coach.
And they have an owner who's
and they have a better
pretty,
owner.
Pretty savvy guy.
Yeah. Now, and I'm not saying that Jerry Jones isn't savvy.
No.
He's a great businessman. I mean, he knows his stuff. But
Jeffrey Lurie's not a distraction
right,
to his team.
He doesn't get into, you know, he's not on the sideline.
The Eagles
not,
do it as similar to the Patriots as anybody.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But it's funny, though, because doesn't Robert Kraft have a pretty good relationship with Jeffrey Lurie, at least in public? He also has a pretty good relationship with Jerry Jones.
Yes, he does.
And they're totally different different ends of the spectrum.
Well, I mean, when Robert Kraft bought the team, one of the first owners he talked to and talked to the most was Jerry Jones, you know?
It's just, I think it's ironic that,
you know, I remember back then, you know, the Cowboys got a lot of flack for going against the league. Back then, Coke was the league sponsor,
they
and they were the first, because they owned their own stadium,
right.
They could sign a deal with Pepsi. Well, the Patriots did it not soon afterward. And
I think,
but it was the Cowboys that caught all the heat for it.
By the way, you brought up the point, Eric, and it's a good one, about the various and the different diverse guys that you would consider Robert Kraft close to. I think that's yet another indication of how much foresight they have and how smart they are in terms of business. They're too smart to limit themselves, much like
that's
Belichick.
Right.
I say this all the time.
Yep.
You don't limit yourself to one philosophy or one way of doing things. There's all different ways to find success in all aspects of business, sports, life, whatever.
Yep.
And the Krafts are smart enough to know it doesn't do me any good to only align myself with one guy who's had success. They want to be like San Francisco. They want to talk to Jerry Jones to find out, you know, some of the business things that he's done that, as you pointed out, Fred, that were outside the box. I want to, you know, align myself with the TV aspect of it and get in with those people. And look, it's no secret. They've become the model franchise for sure, but maybe you know, he is the model owner now as well, you know, in the entire league.
Yeah.
You don't think he just dismisses Daniel Snyder because he's a brash,
absolutely
wildly
not
spending guy, do you?
No. Daniel Snyder.
I'm sure that Robert Kraft wants to know what makes that guy tick.
I mean, look at what Daniel Snyder's doing in his region with radio. I mean, he basically owns the airwaves when it comes to Washington Redskins talk in that area. You know, so
kind of like EEI.
Yeah, so you know, Daniel Snyder brings a lot to the table, too. But I think that and Kraft learned it the hard way, you know, when Belichick was here and Pete Carroll. Stick to what you know, stick to the business part. Hire a guy like a Belichick or an Andy Reid who knows football and let him do his job. You can always get involved when it comes to the big contracts and the business side of it and all that stuff. But, you know, when it comes to dealing with the players,
but you
let the coach do it, because otherwise you usurp his effectiveness.
Yeah, you're totally right, Freddie. Yeah. And you would think that Robert Kraft wouldn't have anything in common with Daniel Snyder. And you would think that he would probably want to get himself as far removed from that philosophy as you could. Here's one guy who signs every big-name free agent and throws wild money at every guy.
And makes it tough on the other owners.
And the other guy is as fiscally responsible as any of the owners who has been successful. You know, value is a buzzword around here because of what Bill Belichick has brought here to New England under Robert Kraft's stewardship. I'll guarantee you, now I don't know Robert Kraft and Daniel Snyder's personal relationship, but I'll guarantee you that Robert and Jonathan are too smart to not have figured out what makes him tick.
That's
why
right.
does he act? Why has he been so successful? If he's just so wild with his money and reckless the way he is, there's no way he could be successful in business. So where's the dichotomy? What makes this guy tick? I'll guarantee you they've kicked the tires on that and figured out what it is that has allowed him to be successful. Mark Cuban is a guy I'll bet you half the NBA loathes.
Right.
And they stay away from him. But I'll bet you the smart owners don't.
Yeah.
The smart owners want to know how he got where he is.
But before he...
And how to massage it. You recognize the mistakes. Mm-hmm.
But before he owned the Dallas Mavericks, they were nothing.
Exactly.
Right.
And now they're, you know, one of the flagship teams. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I totally agree with you.
John checks in from Dallas. He says, you guys are correct. The media here in Dallas is brutal. They have very high expectations for the Cowboys, but the reality is the Cowboys, I believe, will not get past round one in the playoffs this year if they make it at all. The Cowboys have numerous issues. One, a vocal owner who gets his nose in football strategy and does not stay focused on the business side like Mr. Kraft. Two, a terrible head coach who has no spine and no respect from his team. Three, a number one receiver in Roy Williams who has yet to live up to his potential. Four, a new defensive coordinator this year and I think a weak secondary. Five, a QB in Romo who is way overrated. And finally, six, a new stadium that they will not fill due to the crazy prices. That's John in Dallas. Although I did see something recently where they are like 90% sold out now in the stadium.
Is that accurate, though?
They could be saying that just to, you know, pent up the demand a little bit.
I mean, we won't know until we start seeing games.
Yeah. But I do know that, I mean, that stadium in and of itself and the marketing that needs to be around, that's part of the distraction right now. That's hard, you know, on Jerry Jones. He's got to focus right now a lot on that stadium.
Well,
and he's also still the GM.
And
he's going to be asking players to do stuff to help promote it. And it's a burden on everybody.
I wasn't here when we opened this stadium, but how was it for this team when Gillette Stadium opened? Was it much of a distraction?
Well, remember, we were coming off a Super Bowl.
Right.
You know,
right. There was more attention kind of to that.
Yeah, it wasn't the same because, you know, it was a lot of money, $325 million but we're talking $1.3 billion. And it's not just the stadium that they're building down in Dallas. It's the whole thing.
So,
you know, we did that in a phase. Right. We didn't do the second part till 8 years later.
So they're doing what we did in 2002 and in the last 2 years.
That's right.
All at once.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's pretty. Yeah, that's a pretty ambitious undertaking.
And at 2009 prices, which are way above inflation levels, you know.
Right.
In other words, you know, your salary may have gone up a little bit since 2001 as a fan, mm-hmm. but not enough to cover the cost of
the
ticket.
Building, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So they're really asking more out of less.
And you're right about it wasn't really a reasonable comparison between when we went in and what they're going through now.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl was just so huge. It was going to, even if they stayed in the old stadium, that was a tumultuous, wild offseason.
Oh,
you know, with the White House and the parade first, and then the White House and
visits
and,
to all New
and that,
all
the big that alone,
rock, it was
that
rock did, stars. That, you should have seen them at training camp.
That was your marketing. That did the marketing for you. Mm-hmm. Oh my God!
Do you remember
opening a new stadium? I gotta have my tickets.
Do you remember the first days of training camp down at Bryant? Because we were still at Bryant then.
Yeah.
Do you remember when they walked? It was like rock stars.
Yeah. Absolutely.
When they came in, it was unbelievable.
It was great.
And they always got good crowds down at Bryant, but nothing like that year.
You know, and the Dallas fan base is very knowledgeable. You know, they're not, you know, yahoos. A lot of them are. But
I think you're right.
But they get on their team. You know, they get on Jerry Jones. They get on Tony Romo when he screws up.
You know, it's funny. That guy from Dallas just rattled off five or six reasons, and I don't even think he hit on that. I think their offensive line is completely in shambles. I think that's the biggest thing, football-wise.
Yeah.
So, not that I'm saying that any of the ones that he pointed out are invalid. I think they're all valid, except for I don't think Romo stinks.
He says he's way overrated.
Wildly overrated, I think, is how he put it. I don't think he's overrated. I think he's a good quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody considers him one of the best.
Yeah. But it's
I mean, he's certainly Pro Bowl worthy.
It's a very anxious time, I would say, if you're a Dallas fan. You know, you want them to do well, but it's almost like they have to do well. You know, they have no choice. From a lot of different angles, they have to do well.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, at the start of a season, every team feels that kind of pressure.
This is a financial thing. This is where the owner is saying, you got to win. You know, my reputation's on the line. My checkbook's on the line. You know, it's different, a little bit different for them than the other teams out there now. But one thing I want to bring up, non-football, Shaq to Cleveland, that's huge. That's that unbelievable.
That had been rumored for the last week or two, I think.
Well, they almost got him at the trading deadline. They kind of chickened out at the trading deadline.
Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. I mean, even if he only has a few more years left.
He may only have one more year.
You know, well, he has one year left on his contract.
That might be all he has.
Right. But, you know, to have him in the middle, you know, he's still a force. He's still going to get his rebounds.
He had a decent year last year, too. Yeah. I mean, he's not what he once was, obviously.
Yeah,
but
he's hurt a lot.
And you look at the biggest thing. I don't know if he'll be able to do it, but the biggest thing that killed Cleveland, not to bring this off into a whole NBA tangent, they didn't have anybody athletic enough to handle Dwight Howard in the middle.
Right.
Now, I don't know if he can still do that. Now, in his day, he would have eaten Dwight Howard for lunch, no question. But I don't know how physically ready he'll be to do that come the playoffs. They'll need to monitor his minutes a little bit.
Sure.
And I think that's a great move for them. They didn't give up anything to get him.
Boy, Cleveland. Now, how many years does LeBron have? This is it for him, right?
One more year, and then he'll be a free agent after, you know, in 2000.
So they're loading up.
The Cavaliers are just saying, let's go for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially since they fell short this year.
Well, that'll be fun to watch. I might, you know, I love LeBron James, and this is just another reason to watch the Cavaliers. So
are the Celtics still going to be competitive?
Well, I don't know. Who's getting traded now?
Well, you would assume that if they make any trades, though, they're doing it to remain competitive, not to go into rebuilding mode, right? So you'd have the Celtics,
Celtics
have the Cavaliers.
Are the favorites to me.
I heard that Danny Ainge was willing to trade Rondo for Paul Perillo and Larry Johnson.
You know, Perillo?
You know, he just wants to unload Raji Rondo. What's his name?
Rajon Rondo.
Rajon. Let's see. Sam in Chicago says, thanks for keeping the Patriots chatter alive in the dog days of summer. I'm afraid I let the Patriots fans down on a recent visit to Boston. I was downtown near Devonshire Street when a camera crew stopped me and asked if I was a Boston sports fan. They said they were part of Nesson's new sports trivia show. And I noticed my Patriot hat and asked if I would answer a really easy trivia question about the Patriots. Eric's favorite freelance Pats commentator, Fitzy, was the MC and asked me the following question. What Patriot in Super Bowl 38 had two sacks and a touchdown? Super Bowl 38.
Mike Vrabel.
That's correct.
I froze and fell on my face, answering the question by saying Willie McGinnis. He wasn't even on the team then. Sorry for forgetting our dearly departed friend in Kansas, and thanks for the show.
Well, you know what probably happened is that buffoon Fitzy threw you off your game. It wasn't your fault.
But you should have
just start laughing hysterically after
you should have mentioned PFW in progress. That would have been good.
Yeah, anytime you get in the media, chance you get, just even if it's, you know, subliminal thing, just toss that in there.
Except in that case, he shouldn't have said, PFW in progress told me that the answer to this question is, that would have been bad.
Then he would have gotten it. He would have known if he had thrown that in there. We would have given him the power.
Chris from Connecticut on the...
a lot of Connecticut.
Yeah, on the... we were looking up the game of when Nick went
92?
To the game.
92? No, it was Kevin.
Kevin went to the game. He said, great job by Paul. New England lost 16-13 in Miami. In 92, the immortal Jeff Carlson went 8 for 21, and Sam Gash rushed for the Pats' only TD. Scott Lockwood was the leading rusher. I have a hard time remembering Scott Lockwood, but I assume I'm blanking on most of that era to ease the pain. And as
USC,
a wise man once said, mahalo.
A white tailback out of USC,
Scott Lockwood. Wow.
Well,
I think he had a 100-yard game that year. Game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying, like, career or anything.
Let's see. Who's this?
I don't know.
Mario from San Benito.
Mario.
Writes in, how's it going? I was watching this show on NFL Network called Top 10. And the subject for that
love
episode.
Love those, by the way.
The subject for that episode was the top 10 clutch QBs of all time. The list went as follows. These are top 10. I'm assuming.
Bottom up.
Yeah. Number 10 was Dan Marino. Number 9 was Steve Young. Then it was followed by Bart Starr, Otto Graham, Ken Stabler, Johnny Unitas, Roger Staubach. Tom Brady was number 3. Number 2 was John Elway. And Joe Montana was the top clutch quarterback.
I really don't have a problem with that top 3 at all.
Yeah, I can't. After the top 3, I really don't know. Yeah. Well, Bart Starr had that one game.
Bart Starr was clutch. Johnny Unitas was unbelievable. I don't know anything about Otto Grant.
Yeah. Stabler was
known for some comebacks, but I
and some lucky pass interference calls at the end of playoff games,
roughing the passer, whatnot.
Yeah, roughing the passer. So,
I mean, I don't really have a huge problem. I thought when you were leading up to that, I thought somewhere like Peyton Manning was going to show up, and then I was going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Now, when you were watching Otto Graham, how clutch was he?
I figured to myself, I can say that I don't know anything about Otto Graham safely because Andy's not here, and the sophomoric, fallback clutch
Fred
of the show
isn't Paul.
There. But I was wrong yet again.
Tom Brady came in at 3, and I'm pretty satisfied with that considering the two quarterbacks ahead of him.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. Steve Young, by the way, that's the one.
That's the one I would.
He doesn't belong in that
list. Steve Young is way overrated to begin with.
Brett Favre wasn't on the list, and Steve Young was. No. That's ridiculous.
On a segment on the show, Joe Theismann proclaimed that Brady is the best QB he's seen because of the fact that he has won with different players around him. Other pundits said that his drives don't make the same sizzle as Montana's or Elway's. And
see, that's the unfortunate part. That part of it is kind of accurate. As great as the drive was at the end of the Super Bowl, both of them actually, they both ended in 40-some-odd-yard field goals that won games.
Right.
Like Elway, in that big drive in Cleveland.
98 yards.
They had to go 98 yards for a touchdown just to tie the game.
Right.
Montana had to go, I think, 92 yards in the Super Bowl to win the game with a touchdown pass to John Taylor. I know those are just individual games, but the biggest drives that Brady has led have been good drives that were only, you wouldn't even really even remember them if they weren't under the circumstances. Whereas the drives that the other guys had under the same circumstances were touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what he's saying. He's saying
in games that they were losing, by the way, and not tied.
Right.
Yeah. Pundits, they don't have the same sizzle. That Vinatieri was the main reason the Pats won Super Bowls 36 and 38. Gil Santos and Tom Curran said that it doesn't matter if you win by one or by 100, and that it only makes sense to go for a field goal in any game if that's all you need to win.
Oh, I agree with that.
Yeah, that's. But we're not saying
the point I'm trying to make is not that Brady's not great, and not that they only won by one. And first of all, it's ridiculous that anybody would say Vinatieri had more to do with winning the Super Bowls than Brady. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Flat out stupid and wrong. My point is there's a difference in a tie game when you need a field goal to win as opposed to losing, needing a touchdown to tie or go ahead.
Right.
There's a
lot more pressure.
And it's a lot more difficult.
Sure.
I mean, the task itself is inherently more difficult.
Now, Brady, not in Super Bowls.
Yeah, he's
Brady
done it.
Has done
he's
it.
He's done it. He's great. He's a great come-from-behind quarterback.
The Denver, the safety game in Denver is a
good
example.
Great
come
That's
from,
one.
Great come-from-behind quarterback.
Wasn't he the quarterback in Chicago
with
David Patton?
Mm-hmm.
That was a great pass and a great, even better catch.
Yeah. Yep. No, all of those are great examples of when he's done it. But like I said, on the big stage, the other guys have touchdown drives in games that they were losing.
Right.
Brady's were field goal drives. That's why I think he's 3 and not 2 or 1. I could. They're all 3 great come from behind quarterbacks and Super Bowl.
Now,
come from behind
caught
touchdown
that pass against the Giants. I don't want to talk.
Yeah, that would have.
Josh says, "No, Andy. 2 days in a row. I was wrong. There is a God. Let me know if I am sending over a Qdoba feast for Monday. I need the name of whoever is going to pick it up at One Patriot Place." Doc, do you know about that?
I think we're
going
to do it on Tuesday, unless Brian got another lunch buyer. But yes, I'm aware of it.
Okay, good.
Qdoba.
We're going to back to another Qdoba buffet.
Yeah, he was one of the winners.
He was one of the winners last season.
I missed that.
Right? He's got no way of picking it up.
Is Qdoba still a sponsor, or are we kind of like...
They're still a sponsor.
They are. We love Qdoba. let's see. This is Chris again. He's got a lot of emails. He says, I just finished the SI article on Rex Ryan, and I wondered what you think. I can't decide whether he's going to be successful, a disaster, or somewhere in between. If I were a Jets fan, I'd be a little worried about how he seems like a player's coach, especially after the Mangini experiment of being a tough guy went awry. Players' coaches come in after tough coaches, and at first everyone's happy, but that doesn't seem to last. C.P. Carroll after Bill Parcells. Just wanted to get your opinion on how Rex will do in the AFC East over the next 3 years. At least it should be interesting. Also, have you checked out Jermaine Wiggins' Twitter page? It's hilarious. He should be a spokesman for the UFL.
he was a very funny guy here, so I can imagine. He was good personality, Jermaine Wiggins. Good guy. I missed the Wiggy.
Predictions on Rex Ryan's success over the next 3 years.
I think it'll be a mixture of success and...
He'll be a mediocre coach?
Yeah, he'll be a mediocre coach with some outrageous...
Will he be making
things.
The playoffs?
It's hard to say. Without knowing what Sanchez
depends
is going
to how Sanchez
become.
Does.
How long is his leash? How many years before they get rid of him if he doesn't have
three,
playoff?
Four. Yeah, because Sanchez is young, so I'll give him an extra year.
Well, because I think it's going to be... If they don't have success, I think it's going to be an increased spotlight because of his... controversial personality. Yeah. Well, when you talk the way he does and you
right.
don't deliver,
you
I think
back
you
it up.
I think you might lose a little, the honeymoon.
Yep. And you put
it's like Mike Greenberg said. Look, he's saying all these things right now. I don't care. But on opening day, if they go to Houston and they blow them out, I'll be fine with that.
Yeah.
If they play a miserable game and lose, then I'm going to want the guy out of there. That's just the way it goes.
Now we talked about pressure. You know, playing in Dallas is. You know, world's more tough than playing in New York. But this year is a unique year for both the Giants and the Jets because they're also building these massive stadium complexes, trying to sell PSLs that their fan base are just up in arms about. And that puts a little bit of pressure on the ownership and, you know, to come out and win, you know.
I had heard, by the way, that whole project there is off. Not the stadium,
oh,
but
the
like
Xanadu
the Xanadu thing.
Oh, really?
I heard that they pulled the plug on that.
Wow. So the ski
so
jump?
What are they, yeah.
Really? So
yeah.
It's just going to be sitting there like a white elephant?
Well, I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know what they're going to do with it.
Wow. That's.
And I don't know if that's accurate.
I heard that
from a semi-reliable New York
You
source.
Know, the Crafts, everyone says, oh, look at Patriot Place. Let me tell you something. The Crafts are very, you know, with the economy, the way it went down, we're lucky we're doing as well as we are here. You know, the restaurants are doing great. Retail's a little bit slow, but it's slow everywhere. But, my God, if we had been like a year later, we'd be looking at steel girders not being finished too. Hmm. You know, we're very lucky that we got it done when we got it done. You know, so there's a lot of projects that are just holes in the ground right now.
Yeah, I think getting back to Ryan, he's an interesting guy, and I think he might be one of those
guys. The whole family's a bunch of jerks.
No, I hate Buddy Ryan. I agree with you on that. And I wasn't all that fond of Rob based on, you know, his time here. But I think what he's trying to do, Fred, is be one of those guys that puts the onus and the pressure on him.
Yeah, but he doesn't play.
No, but I think that's what he's trying to do is, like, don't – you know, Bill does it as well, just in a different way. Bill's quiet about it, but there's no mistaking – you know, if you're going to be mad about the Spygate thing, you're going to be mad at Bill, and you're going to direct everything at Bill. You're not going to worry about the players because I'm not going to put that distraction on them. And I think in a weird way, by being kind of this wacky, quotable guy, I think he's trying to say, put the pressure on me. That's going to take some pressure off the players. Now, I don't know if it'll work. You know, I don't know if he can coach.
If he's got the horses.
Yeah, we talk about all this stuff. And you know, whether or not this guy can succeed or whatever. You know, Phil Jackson's this Zen master, and he has all these, philosophies. Well, you know, why don't you make him coach the Clippers, and we'll see how the triangle offense works.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great coach because he's been able to manage the talent that he's had. But he has had immense
talent. Yeah.
Arguably two of the, at worst, five best players to ever play the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's won 10 titles. So if Rex Ryan can coach, if he has the ability to coach and he has some players, he'll win. Doesn't matter about these stupid things that he's saying. And I agree that a lot of these things he's saying are pretty dumb.
Yep.
But all that ultimately isn't going to matter if he can't coach or, if he's a great coach, it's not going to matter either.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I forgot to mention Troy Brown was honored at the Tradition, which is the Sports Museum in New England's annual fete.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say
bingo!
It?
Yes. Bingo! I got bingo!
And
were you feted?
You were feted. Okay. Yes.
And so Bill Belichick was the one who presented Troy
Bill
Brown.
Had a busy day yesterday. Did you read that? Yeah, Mikey Reese wrote it. You had to go down to Connecticut.
He was in the
take part
pro-am.
In the golf tournament down there. And
it is
back.
What it is.
So now Kyle Pesetti, who's still around, is going to be submitting a story about that, right?
Yeah, he checked in with me this morning, and he said it was your standard fare.
Yep.
Talked to Troy a little bit beforehand. Got a, a really good quote from Gino.
Yeah.
About it, and this is an interesting part, and Gino, as usual, has some insight. Gino Cappelletti, for those of you who don't know who Gino is.
Hello!
Well done.
He said that it was great to see a guy like Troy be the first kind of the new era guys be inducted into this tradition, into the New England Sports Museum, because he's more of a throwback kind of player.
Right.
Yeah, that's why he's so. It's so fitting that he was the first of the new guys because he really was kind of.
As Belichick said, if you look up football player in the dictionary, there's a picture of Troy Brown next to it. That's what he says.
Did he say it again last night?
Yeah.
Did he really?
Did he?
I think he did. They used the same quote.
Did Bill just say, just use the quote I used the last time?
Hey, Tuesday we had a bunch of people in. One of them was Basil.
Yes.
From Sherlock Holmes fame.
Right.
He says, I just wanted to drop I just wanted to drop you guys a quick note to thank you for having us in on Tuesday. I had a great time. The tour was great, but I had a better time in studio. I hadn't heard of the show until Mike, who was Salt, turned me on to it. And as a result, I just subscribed to PFW. Wow.
Excellent.
All
right.
I'd love to do it again anytime. Oh, and Fred, don't let them give you any crap for what you eat. I guarantee that you most definitely eat healthier than I do. My philosophy is salad isn't food. Salad is what food eats. So, there you go. What are you whispering over there?
Nothing.
Huh?
Nothing.
Nothing.
What are you whispering?
No, I nothing.
Say hi to oregano for us.
Oh. Spicy?
Yeah.
The Spice Girl.
Well, we had salt and pepper.
Well, pepper was in, and I know she sent a picture. Which, did you get the picture? It was kind of grainy. It wasn't really.
Well, it was a cell phone.
Taken on a cell phone.
It was a cell phone photo. So.
And, you know, I know.
It was kind of grainy.
James Cuff wanted a picture for PFWinProgress.com, and that really doesn't do justice to Pepper.
No, it doesn't.
She's a lot more cute than.
She's a lovely girl.
Yeah. Yes. She's a sweetheart. Real
Salt lucked out.
Real cutie.
All right, Fred.
Yeah. All right. Calm down.
Now you're starting to worry me.
No, it's, you know.
We get it.
I know that he's smack dab in that midlife crisis.
There's a large part of our listening audience, including strippers, who's the head of the group, who that matters to.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see.
Fred. No, I mean it. She's hot.
Yeah.
She was.
All right. You're making her uncomfortable down there now.
You're making me uncomfortable.
Robin in Alaska. Back to the great debate. This is going to go down as the great debate. What are you two schoolgirls giggling about over there?
Just,
I'm trying to do a show, and you guys are like whispering and giggling. And
what? Now I know why Andy and Eric have a bromance when they go on the road together.
Hey,
it's a lot more fun when Andy's not around making fun of them.
Anyway, Robin from Alaska says, I wanted 19-0. It's back to the great debate.
Good man.
It just won't go away.
If I could quantum leap, I'd leap right into Eli Manning on that miracle scramble and then trip over my own feet. However, history is as it is, and in the wise lyrics of Monty Python, you have to look on the bright side of life. Mm-hmm. I believe the way history is finally gives old-timers and Brady-era fans something to unite over. Prior to the loss, all of the Brady-era fans only knew success. Now the Brady-era fans can finally look at old-timers in the eye, and we can all unite in our pity and depression. Brady-era fans that haven't jumped ship due to the loss have earned their stripes, so to speak. I also do not believe that having the loss will taint any future championships that the Brady-era Patriots might gain. I think the loss could enhance any future Brady-era championship in same way a surprise loss and then rematch win... Okay. I get your point.
Fred's exasperated.
It just goes on and on. Anyway, he says, no matter how the next championship gets here, when that next Lombardi arrives, I'm ready to cheer for it just like it was our first one.
Yeah, I suppose. But I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever get over that.
Ever over Macho Grande?
Unless, I don't know. If they ever go undefeated again and win a Super Bowl, maybe that'll erase it. But I don't think I'll ever forget that.
Scott says, I wanted to thank you for the entertaining my question about 19-0. I guess it was Scott from Brockton's question.
It was Scott.
I lean closer to the 19-0 side mostly due to the pain that I still feel from crushing into the season, but I can see merit on either side.
Yeah.
I think that there were some absurd assumptions made during the arguments,
but Andy,
since the question itself was rather absurd, I guess it's all a wash. I was hoping to get some over-unders in – from the team on a few of the points brought up during the discussion. Okay, ready? Right. Over, under.
Okay.
Brady stays with the Pats for 5.5 more years.
Under.
Under.
Over. The Pats make,
I hope you're right, by the way.
The Pats make 3.5 Super Bowl appearances through the next decade.
Under.
I'm going to say under.
I'm going to say under, too, especially if I say that Brady's not going to be
here. The Pats win 3 more rings through the next decade.
Under.
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 You just said under?
Under, yeah.
Wow.
He's realistic. He's being realistic this time.
Well, first of all, that's not what we pay Fred for.
Well, okay. First of all, we don't pay Fred.
Well, it's the collective we, Eric. You know, take a leap with me.
I'm being realistic. They'll win two. Had the Pats known
one that they should have won.
Right.
Had the Pats known that they would be starting Castle before the start of the season, the Pats would have won 11.5 games last year. If they had known.
That's interesting.
They had known Castle.
I'm going to say under.
If they had known.
Because I can't imagine that he would have gotten any more preparation than he got. Because Brady didn't really participate in the preseason.
I'm going to say, push, but I mean, they would have won the 11 games that they won.
But he went through preseason with the mindset, I'm not going to start.
Basically, what Scott's asking, I think, is
would they have been better off?
Would he have been more prepared to start the season if he had known?
I don't think so, because he got all the reps in preseason.
Yeah, I know, but you did it without the mindset of, I am the starter. It's a little different.
Well, I mean, but I think that it's a very negligible difference. I agree with you. It's different, Fred. But it just as easily could have been, holy crap, I'm the starting quarterback.
It's an interesting question.
You know, you could argue that they won the first game because he was too stupid to know any better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, had he been nervous and prepared for it, maybe he wouldn't have played. I mean, he made a great, great throw
to Moss
that ultimately won him the game. I mean, that play won him the game out of their end zone.
That play epitomized his whole season last year.
When it looked worst, he was at his best.
Yeah.
An Andyism.
Will any team go 19-0 through the next decade?
Under.
No. Will any team? No.
No, they won't. All right. On the phone right now, 508-543-7482, is Orlando in Springfield. Orlando, how you
doing?
The
Big O.
Hey, what's going on? In the words of the great 21st century Southern philosopher Paul Wall, I bid you, what a do, baby.
what a do, baby.
Hey, listen, man. Had a question. Wanted to know, actually a couple questions. One thing I wanted to know is Sean Crable. What are you guys expecting out of him this year? How has he looked so far? You know, I mean, what do you guys think he's going to be doing this year in terms of numbers-wise?
I can't really give you much on what he's looked like so far because so far we haven't seen anything. We'll find out at camp and then, you know, into the preseason and have a better gauge. I am the resident optimist when it comes to Sean Crable. He's my guy. I just love the tangibles. I mean, I love the numbers. I love the size and speed. I loved his career at Michigan. I thought he played at a high level. I think he can be a guy that can contribute this year, at the very least, as a situational, sub-package guy, getting after the passer. And I think he's going to be in a three-man rotation, an outside linebacker with Adalys Thomas, Pierre Woods as the starters, Crable being that third guy. And I think he's going to get you 5 or 6 sacks at least.
I kind of agree with Paul that he will contribute significantly. It will be mostly with him and Woods, I think, on that probably on that on that left side. I just, you know, like Paul said, we haven't seen enough of him. What we saw of him last year was he made a couple of good plays in games, and in practice he didn't really stand out.
So what I'd be looking for in the preseason to jump on your point. Is him getting more of those reps in preseason earlier in the game.
Right.
Last year, like Eric said, he made a couple of plays, but
they were in the third, fourth quarter.
Against the car washers.
Right.
I want him playing against guys that are going to be in the NFL.
Right.
And here's the one thing, you know, my jury's still out on Crable as well, too. But I think, you know, it's more realistic to think along Paul's lines where he'll be more of a situational guy. But the one thing that's kind of turning me toward the optimist in Crable is what his teammates are saying about him.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. Richard Seymour was really he was the first guy he mentioned too. Was how fast he was off the edge and
good use of his hands.
Yeah, talked a lot about Crable. Now I'm talking about Orlando. Right. Talked a lot about working on his lower body, and that's the thing that everybody talked about as soon as we drafted him. Wow, that guy's really, really skinny legs. Mm-hmm. Well, evidently the Patriots thought the same thing because that was what they focused on in the offseason. I think it's a shame. I think if it was 1 week later last year, one week earlier that Adalys Thomas got hurt, he wouldn't have been placed on IR. I think he was placed on IR with a pretty minor injury because they needed a roster spot. And then Adalys Thomas went down, and they probably needed Crable, and we would have gotten a chance to see him play, and I think that would have helped him immeasurably. Just
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Even if he could have gotten three or four games worth of experience, the way Will Hite did at the end of the year. And that's a real shame because now he's really starting anew as a rookie over again.
I mean, if you watched any Michigan games in the last few years, Crable was mentioned almost every play on defense. He was one of their best playmakers. So if he can make that jump to the NFL and become that sort of player, then the Pats will have something. But honestly, Orlando, haven't had a chance to see him do those kind of things because he's been hurt and he's been, you know, unavailable. He hasn't been out there on the field. What we've seen so far this year has been without pads, so you really can't – it's really not fair to try to judge a player when he's not going full speed and not able to do the kind of things he can do with pads on.
Yeah, I'm definitely hoping for big things from this cat, man. I remember seeing him like last year in a couple preseason games, and I kind of thought to myself, you know, kind of caught your attention. Wow, this guy's got a, you know, large wingspan. He seems to move pretty good. And then, like you said, it was just like, you know, done. And it was like, man, what happened to this guy? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm really hoping for big things from him this year.
Yeah. Hey,
and the other question I had was, you guys were talking about the owners. This is a pretty kind of interesting subject, considering you know, the owners are the owners. The other guys, you know, basically, you know, writing the checks. So, barring your relationships with the Crafts, you know, barring that, I mean, I want an honest assessment from you guys. If you could give me like a top five list of owners in the NFL, you know what I mean, overall in terms of the best owners, which owners do you think would fill out that top five list of yours?
It's a good question. I
Not including the Crafts.
Yeah, not including them. Yeah.
I would say, I mean, in no particular order, you'd have to put the Rooneys in there.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Screw them.
No.
Screw them.
Come on, Fred.
What happened to the realistic Fred that was over here a few minutes ago?
What?
What happened to the realistic Fred who was talking to us a couple minutes ago?
No, I have real concrete reasons why I don't put the Rooneys up there. First of all, okay, they've been in the league a long time, won the team on a bet. It wasn't his, really.
But that has nothing to do
with
it. Have they served well in their capacity?
Listen to me. They produce good teams for Pittsburgh overall. But in this age of collective bargaining and owner in revenue sharing, the Rooneys are not helping the cause. They're hurting it. They do not contribute what they should be contributing to the pot. Okay?
Okay.
And they don't play ball when it comes to being part of a 32-team league.
All right, that's stuff we're not privy to, so we'll take your word for that. But
I also don't know if that necessarily.
I think what Orlando is asking is, in their capacity as owners, how have they served their teams? And I'm not sure any of that has anything to do with that.
Well, I don't know. I take the whole package.
I would put the.
But
other...
I'm talking about a guy who, you know, for me, a good owner for my team is a guy who is consistently hiring people, football people, that do a good job in football and are able to create a competitive environment for me on a consistent basis.
Then they're right up there. They're getting good coaches, top three.
They're getting good general managers.
They don't get
wild with their spending. They're not these maverick type. Yep.
I think that's what we're all talking
about. And that's
what
I'm talking about.
Okay, that's fine. I'm not limiting it to that.
That's what it is.
No,
that's what the question is.
But,
I mean, let's let Orlando say. What are the parameters that you're looking for, Orlando?
I mean, I guess like overall, in terms of basically how do you run the organization, relationships with the fans, relationships with the communities around them, you know, if they're winning, obviously, you know what I mean? How owners that like, and I hate to kind of put this in here, but, you know, but like Kraft. Kraft seems to like, you know, invest heavily in the Patriots, and he's, you know, it's not like a part-time thing with him like some owners, you know what I mean? They got a team that's like, they couldn't care less if they win or lose as long as they make a little money, whereas the Crafts seem a little different, you know what I mean?
I'm saying overall. I would put a guy that I mentioned earlier in our discussion, Jeffrey Lurie of the Eagles.
Lurie?
Yeah, I agree.
He'd be in the top five.
You know, a lot of people kind of make fun of him a little bit because he's a little bit of an oddball, but Paul Allen from the Seahawks, You know, they haven't had the overall success, but he's done a lot with the fan base.
I think that's a good outside the box.
That
one,
is a
Freddie,
good one
because I don't think that necessarily he's a high profile owner. But
oh,
I think
he's just the opposite.
He's done, a great job.
He does. He makes sure
Seahawks,
he stays out of
the. You talk about some of the things lineup. Orlando talked about with the community and the fabric of that area. I mean, they love the Seahawks.
He got a great stadium built for his team.
So he's done a good job.
That's a good one, Fred.
Now I would have said Lamar Hunt. Certainly,
absolutely.
And I'm not sure. You know, since he passed away. I'm not sure, you know, if Clark Hunt is going to be in that.
He can't be that good because
I'm not sure yet.
With Pioli there, so.
But you know, there's some of the other ones that I don't really think do a great job. Obviously, Mike Brown and Jacksonville's a Weaver. Is he still there?
Yeah,
Wayne Weaver.
Yeah. You know who I liked? Carolina Richardson.
Yeah,
Jerry Richardson.
You know, hopefully,
but he's ill.
Yeah, he's very ill.
Yeah.
What about the young guy from Baltimore? I don't know much about him. Steve Bisciotti.
I don't know a lot about him either. So, but he.
And what's the deal with the Giants?
They got the kids running it, right?
So
the Tisch family and the Mara family.
Are they, you know, cut from the same cloth? Because they were considered great.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about that situation. You know, the Jets is Woody.
Yeah,
Woody
I don't think he does a great job.
No,
I don't think, you know, Bidwell is terrible.
Yeah.
Where would you put
Ralph Wilson? I don't think does a great job.
Where would you put Pat Bolin?
Pat Bowles.
I think he has his strengths and he has his real weaknesses. You know,
maybe around the mid level,
middle of the road. Yeah, he wears a fur jacket. I just can't respect a guy that wears a fur jacket. In today's
you see what
day
we
and
deal
age.
With Orlando. You see, I mean, you gave us a very serious question that we try to answer for you, and that's the kind of
I'm serious.
And God forbid,
I know you are.
God forbid he wears a scarf, he's going to be accused of being a Jonas Brothers.
Oh, then he gets
fan.
A punch in the face.
Well, then he's a Jonas brother.
Yeah.
Guys, listen, man. The show is great as always, man. Keep up the good work, guys.
All right, Orlando.
I think it's interesting that we couldn't come up with five.
Well,
the Rooneys, Jeffrey Lurie.
No, I think.
Aside from the
I think
crafts,
when you said,
I think we got
as far
five,
as
didn't we?
What he delivers to his fan base and in the community, Rooney's right up there,
well,
top three.
See,
there's no doubt about that.
I'm not going to argue with you about the stuff that you were talking about because I don't know anything about that. Whether you know, maybe you know, Robert says, "Geez, you know what? This guy, he's a real thorn in our side. He's not really looking at it in the right way." You might be right. I don't know. But I don't really think that matters to fans. Fans of the Pittsburgh Steelers don't care about that stuff. They care.
No, I know.
Does this guy care about us?
Yep.
Does he care about putting a winning product on the field? And does he go about it in the right way? And I think the answer to all those questions for Rooney are yes.
I have to
just
say
like
that's
Just like
with
true.
Lurie. How about Bob Irsay?
Yeah, I think
or Jim Irsay.
It's Jim Irsay. I think he does a good job, you know, Polian aside.
He tries hard.
I mean, as much as I hate Polian, he does a good job.
Yeah.
He can't say it.
I can't really say it.
to quote Fred Kirsch,
I can't get into that. Brian in Tuscaloosa, Fred, you're my guy, and I'm sorry I baited you into cursing, but 18-1 shirts will bring out that in the fan. Another amazing show on Tuesday. Don't ever listen to the critics that say you guys go off topic too much for their liking. To hell with them. As a former Orlando resident, I can say that Salt and Pepper hit right on the mark with their assessment of the Miami fan base. They're horrible. And do you guys have any game day traditions or rituals not work-related? For me, I have to be dressed in Patriots gear and only drink Sam Adams during Patriots games.
Fred, too.
Yeah, I only drink...
in the press box.
You
that's
have to
a
wear
Patriots
gear.
And drink Sam Adams during the game. I have a ritual. I mean...
You do?
Both home and away. I try to do
different ones? Like one for home, one for away?
Well,
or
I mean,
is it the same for both?
Obviously the setting's different, but I try to do it the same way every time. And a lot of it is done for us. You know, you have to be on the bus and you have... But I don't like to go out of the normal things that I do on game day.
You put the left shoe on
it's
first
funny,
and then
usually
the right one?
I'm very in tune with those kinds of things and I never really noticed that.
Well, you know, I come early. I come like
right,
8 hours
early. For everything.
And I have to get up to the press box. I have to set up everything in a certain way. I take out the binoculars. I put things in kind of – I unload
right, so that's your ritual.
In
that's
the same
that's
order,
good.
You know.
Wasn't it supposed to be non – did he ask for non-work related?
No, well, he's.
Or,
I think he's.
Saying,
I think he's understanding the fact that we're working and, you know, we can't put on our Brady and Bledsoe shirts, you know, on day of the game and drink Sam Adams beer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was – before I worked for Fred, I had a lot of those. I wore, you know, home – like just like you're saying, home and away. With I wore a home shirt, an away shirt, you know. Cue Andy's little cackles here.
That's for the Northeastern games. That's not for Patriots.
Oh, I have a ton of them. I have a ton of them for Northeastern games.
I bet you do.
And then when you're in a winning streak, you know, you don't change things during a winning streak. I had a lot of those, and I'm glad, to be honest with you, I'm kind of glad that I don't have to worry about them anymore because these occupy far too much of my thought process.
Sawyer from Waterloo, quick note on the debate. I asked my wife what she would want, 10 years of Brady or 19-0, and Brady retires. Her response, he would never do that. He wouldn't retire. Now we know why there are no female sports talk radio hosts. Wait, I do know of one. You laughed too soon, Eric.
I wasn't laughing.
I was laughing.
Okay, I thought it was Eric laughing. Eric,
I thought it was a
Eric
good line.
Looked at me like a serial killer. Just
well, that's
there.
What he does.
Yeah.
Although a little bit less often now that Andy's on vacation.
Here's your chance for some sucking up. One thing you guys are omitting from the debate is the greatest Patriot, Robert Kraft. It was brought up that the Patriots were good before Brady. With Brady and after Brady, but the one consistent throughout the entire Patriots run is Mr. Kraft.
Thank you, Robert.
So, absolutely. Let's see. What's the matter, Eric?
Nothing.
Are you done?
No,
you look like you've checked out.
No.
Have you checked out?
No, I was distracted by Mila Kunis on That 70s
Who?
Show.
Mila Kunis?
Yeah.
Mila.
Sounds like a female anatomy.
You sure? All right, that's it.
What?
What?
Just head on.
Hey, guys. Who is this now?
I don't know. Sometimes the name isn't the same in the email.
Oh, Bill in Vail, Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Hey, guys. The Beaver Whisperer and an anal alumni. Great argument last...
You don't have to read those things, Fred.
What?
You don't have to read everything that somebody writes in an email.
Great argument last week about...
We're not about
censorship. See, now he just assumes that he's the guy.
But we're not about censorship here, Fred. I agree with you.
Great argument last week about whether taking Brady for 10 years or the undefeated season. I would have to agree with Andy on this one. If Brady stayed 10 more years, that would probably translate to the Patriots being an NFL elite team over a span of 20 years. When I think of the 70s, I think Dallas-Pittsburgh. When I think of the 80s, I think San Fran. When I think of the 90s, I think Dallas. I can easily go back and say the best teams in this decade based on Super Bowls and the playoffs would go something like Pats, Indy, Pittsburgh. I would rather look back in 2020 and be able to say that the Pats have been the best team over the past 20 years. There is a more than average chance that Belichick and Brady could win three more Super Bowls in the next 10 years. The possibility of winning six and the history that would make, and considering it would be a very long time, if ever, that a coach-quarterback combo won that many. That, to me, is worth the trade-off for the perfect season. That wasn't the question. It has a different type of immortality to it.
Very Brian Williams-like right there.
Brady's name
again.
Would be mentioned before Montana, before Bradshaw. The Pats would be mentioned before the great teams in history. They would be considered the best there ever was, with no real argument to the contrary. And by the way, Andy, the last... Either or, I asked you to pick your starting offense based on the players I gave you to choose from. I based it on a three-receiver set with one tight end and a running back. Maybe because I didn't include the word starting offense in my question, you couldn't get the concept around your massive cranium. Like Paul said, it's my game and my rules, and if you don't like it, you can just take your jacket and go home.
Wow. There you go.
He's just kidding.
No, I know he's not. I like it.
Oh, okay.
I have a serious question for Bill.
I do agree with you, though, Fred. If you're asking me to choose between what Bill just unfolded, I'll take what Bill unfolded.
Right.
But Bill, I don't know how you can say there's a better than average chance that they win three more Super Bowls. I mean, I don't know how you can make that assessment.
We're spoiled.
There's a better than average chance that they could win three more Super Bowls.
Right.
I'm not saying that they can't win three more Super Bowls.
No,
I'm
but
saying
it would be above average.
It would be above average, exactly.
Yeah.
Bill's the guy who sent us the jackets?
Yes. You don't like yours now?
No. Oh. He followed that up saying he was going to send us hats, too.
He is.
Jeez.
I was curious. What kind of are we getting baseball
hats
or are we getting the winter
hats? You wanted your jacket
to
have more of an athletic cut?
A tapered look, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like my jacket the way it is.
Frilly tapestries?
They're going to be Vail staff hats is what he told me.
Wow.
Like the winter skull caps?
I can walk around with that jacket and the cap and look like a real ass.
You don't have to walk around with that jacket to do that.
You know.
What he said.
I could be a real poser.
Again.
What?
All right. What? Crickets.
Walter in Cambridge. According to
I love Walter.
We were talking about the UFL on Tuesday. He says, according to the UFL, players fill the rank of teams as they get cut from training camp. Each division cut players are sent to one team, such as Orlando gets the first priority on the AFC and NFC South cuts. New York has the AFC and NFC, Las Vegas the two North divisions, and San Francisco the two West divisions. Cut QBs get $200,000. Other players cut from teams get $100,000. That's pretty good.
Wow. It's a lot more than I thought they'd get.
Players with no NFL training camp experience get $50,000. So practice squad players in an NFL team will have to get at least $100,000 over a six-week time frame.
That's good.
Stay with the NFL franchise. Does this affect the salary cap? After the UFL championship on Thanksgiving, we might see an influx of players refreshing teams that might be hampered with injuries.
Exactly what a farm system should do.
The four UFL coaches will be Jim Haslett, Jim Fossil, Dennis Green. The fourth is longtime NFL defensive coordinator Ted Cottrell. How do you see these coaches' philosophy playing off one another? Do you see a relationship between the coach selected and the divisions from which the players are arriving?
Well, Dennis Green is a Bay Area guy, I think, originally. I think he's from...
Well, yeah,
from there.
He got his start, right? Yeah, at Stanford, and but he's been all over. I mean, he coached Northwestern, he coached Stanford, he was with the Niners.
Right.
Most of these guys are nomads. You know, they've been all over the place.
Cottrell's been on both coasts.
Yeah. So what are the names of the teams?
Cottrell was a defensive coordinator for the Jets, for Buffalo, like
San Diego.
What is Las Vegas' team going to be called?
I don't know any of the teams'
names.
Do you?
So we're going to have, like, you know, Dennis Green go, Las Vegas is who we thought they were.
Maybe.
Could be. But see, I think this system, that the way they have it, is just right.
Well,
they're not trying to compete with the NFL.
Yeah, what I like is trying to help. It's a very structured system.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
It is true.
You know, if you're this, you make this. If you're this, you make that. I think that's a good way to kind of like the MLS. You know, you keep your costs fixed.
Right.
And you might be able to figure out, you can't get in bidding wars for these guys, because that's ultimately when, I mean, the USFL worked. People forget that. The USFL worked. But I think they expanded too quickly. They started getting a little exorbitant with the salaries. They decided to get out of that spring season and get to the fall, and they fought, and they got that whole thing with the lawsuit.
They got a dollar.
They won, and they really lost.
Right.
Pyrrhic victory, if you will.
Pyrrhic victory. Good, Paul.
That's what I was looking for. You condescending, you know what?
Squidward.
I learned that from Fred.
Speaking of which, maybe we'll do a little sporkle this afternoon.
Maki in Ireland just watched a roundtable discussion on NFL Network, the topic being which one player would you choose to start a franchise with? Marsha Falk picked Sean Merriman. Morin Sapp picked Mario Williams. Deion Sanders chose Mike Tomlin, saying he would prefer to pick a coach. Jamie Dukes, football's smartest idiot, picked Michael Vick, citing that it gives a guaranteed strong running game and thus the defense would always be well rested. I personally would pick between Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Adrian Peterson. Who would you pick? Also, got to agree with Andy, the 19-0 Brady retiring hypothetical.
I don't think there's an argument to be made for anyone other than Brady or Manning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now.
You got to go with the quarterback.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I would strongly disagree with all of them. All of them.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Vick is just laughable.
I will say, though, picking a coach makes sense.
Yeah, except they didn't pick the right one.
Right.
If you're going to pick the coach, he's the guy that's down the hall from us.
It's
the gray-hooded one.
Yeah.
Mario Williams and Sean Merriman.
That's
Mario
Williams?
Name one game.
And Sean Merriman?
Yeah.
Oh, please.
I mean, you need, if you have one guy to start your franchise, don't you think that you need to get a guy who affects games, impacts games? Has Mario Williams impacted more than two or three games in his 3 years?
It's nutty.
And I'm not saying the guy's a stiff or anything.
He's a good player, but that's a perfect example
of guys trying to
too
be clever.
Too hard, absolutely.
Yeah. It's overthinking.
Sean Merriman is a good pass rusher, but he's not even as good as DeMarcus Ware.
No.
He's not even as good as DeMarcus Ware.
Nathan writes in, last week I asked about how you would compare the Patriots' offense of today with the 2007 Patriots offense. I think a much bigger difference would be comparing the Patriots defense of today with the 2007 defense. Do you think we even compare? Where do you think we are, better or worse?
I do think we compare. I think this defense is going to be a little bit better than 07's. where, well, where we had the problem in 07, I think, was more so in the secondary. Whereas now, I think they might have helped clear that up a little bit. I think that the problem now is obviously at linebacker, most specifically at the outside. But there's
defensive
a little bit of a
line's the same.
Defensive line is the same.
Linebacker is not as deep.
Not as solidified either.
Not as good and not as deep.
Yeah.
But
is it as?
And then the secondary, I think, is probably a wash. But we don't know because we don't know how good these guys are going to be. I mean, if Wheatley and Wilhite, Chung, Butler, Merriweather, if these guys can come in and solidify themselves, then I think they can be better. I agree with Eric. But we just don't know.
Yeah.
Because most of these guys haven't played yet. You know, I think they have the I think they have the opportunity to be a better defense overall. But, you know, I think Vrabel was a terrific player in 07, and you don't have him. It's going to
– yeah.
We have to wait and see what kind of production they get out of Pierre Woods and Banta Kane or Crable.
The only thing that's
Red
the same is really the front three.
The front three, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I also think that Asante Samuel had as good a year in 07 as you can have as a corner. He played that, you know, and I said that we said that a lot that year.
Yep.
He played that position as well as it could be played in 07.
Yep.
You know, is Sean Springs or Lee Bodden going to play that well? Maybe. Maybe they will.
I don't know. We don't know. Ed in Virginia, am I the only one who was sick of listening to Marshall Faulk's anti-Patriot bias in the NFL channel? It seems he's getting a lot of airtime. Is it all about outsmarting him in Super Bowl 36?
I think it is. All stems from that game.
He has a personal grudge, and he lets it show.
Yeah, I agree.
He's not the impartial journalist that you're supposed to be when you're in that position.
And that's fine if he made it somewhat, I don't know, entertaining. You know, because there's an element of being funny about it. You know, like listening to Jerry Callahan talk about defend the Republicans. You know, there's an element, it's entertaining sometimes when you know where he stands. And you just think to yourself, how's he going to do this one?
Right.
And he finds a way. Mm-hmm. Marshall Faulk is not funny. He's not entertaining.
And he's genuinely angry about it on the air.
Yeah. And he's so transparent.
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to go.
There's nothing about it that's of any value. I think he's the worst one of that group.
Lost their best on-air talent when John Gruden went to Monday Night Football.
Yeah,
and I also
Dennis
think,
Eckersley would be a better football commentator.
Yeah,
than,
and on that group, you know, like they make fun of Jamie Dukes, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a veteran of the Jamie Dukes show.
Thanks, big guy.
He's far better than Marshall Faulk.
Plus, you've done work with him.
I just said, I'm not saying this because I'm not. Do you ever listen to anything that anybody else in the show says other than you?
We got to get the clip of, do you have that? Do you have the clip of when Paul was on that show?
Thanks, big guy.
Yeah. The sign off?
Yeah, that's great.
Jamie Dukes calling
Jamie
Paul
Dukes
big guy.
Jamie Dukes called him big guy.
Zach in Florida.
Marshall Faulk, if I may segue for a second. Last year when they were here for the Jets game and they did the Thursday Night Football, him and Deion Sanders were standing down on the sidelines.
Hugging Brett Favre, telling them that they knew he could do
it? No, they were on the home our sideline.
Oh, okay.
So Tugender and I go up to him and go, hey, do you guys mind if we bring a camera over and we'll put you guys up on the video board? And Deion's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And Marshall looks at us and goes, no way. Those people in those stands hate me. They will boo the heck out of me.
He's right about that.
He knows.
So
he's
right about that.
After that, we couldn't even
and
talk
of course,
to him.
Deion's never seen a camera he said no to, so you knew he would say
that's
yes
a good
to
point.
Zach in Florida says, referring to the Rex Ryan email, Mike Tomlin is a player's coach, or from what I heard, and I think I'm going to hate Ryan a lot.
I think to an extent the best coaches are both. I think Bill, you would never describe Bill as a player's coach, but he's a player's coach too.
Well, they respect him.
And you know what? You listen to the way they talk about him. They love playing for him.
Who
that,
it?
To me, is a player's coach.
James Sanders said that he spent one-on-one time with him and got to know him and, you know, was really impressed that this coach would take the time to sit and get to know him
and you
as
that,
a person, not
I think
just
you
a
get
football
that
player.
More from older guys who've spent time with Bill.
I think
the younger guys get very intimidated.
And
because,
they should be.
Well, they should be, but also because, you know, like the young guys early in his career – I don't know if he had that same relationship with them because he hadn't really won anything
yet.
Well,
the thing is, you could look, Bill Belichick has a fistful of rings.
Now he does. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, but you're
9 years ago.
You get in here and shut the hell up and do your work, and maybe in 4 or 5 years after you've proven yourself, you know, you can talk to him as a contemporary.
Right.
But until then, do your work.
Right. I'm just saying 9, 10 years ago when he hadn't won all those rings, I'm sure the dynamic was a little different. because, you know, if you get a guy, if you get a guy with his personality who comes in and lays down that law, and then they look at him and say, "What? Who are you?"
That's the risk you take when you have that type of personality. You know?
But now that he has one, you come in, you're a rookie, you have that awe of him, which is deserved. But the older guys who've been through it, they know what he's like.
Look,
Parcells was the same way.
Listen, I was just going to say, before Parcells won his first Super Bowl with the Giants, he was kind of on the hot seat in New York. You know, he wasn't necessarily, everyone thought he was that great a coach. In fact, a lot of people really questioned him and thought maybe this guy can't do it.
Especially in that market.
Right. Then he wins the Super Bowl and everything changes.
Sure. And then he won the other one.
Right.
And then he moves on and he helps this team. Then he moves on and he helps the Jets.
So until you get
Cowboys.
That, when you have that type of personality, you better win. You know?
So. Yeah, I think the whole, you know, disciplined guy followed by the player's coach, followed by that's definitely true. That cliche is accurate. Team, you know, we started with Parcells to Carroll to Belichick. I mean, that's definitely the way it is. But I think the best coaches got, you know, the guy, you know, Tomlin. I see everybody just said Tomlin's a player's coach. Did you hear the way the players, the Steelers players, talked about Tomlin in his first year? Did you see some of those features at the Super Bowl? Hines Ward had to go to him and say, "You're killing us. You got to ease off the gas pedal. You know, you're driving us into the ground." Blah blah blah. And I don't think that you describe players' coaches like that. But what he did to show that he is, you know, he can be bold.
He adapted.
Yeah, he adapted. And I think that Bill has done that. I think Parcells. How many times have you said it, Fred? You know, Parcells had the whole thing. He had to have his circle the wagon guys. Well, that's being a player coach. That's listening to your players. Bill does it here. Bill Belichick does it here with his captains' meetings, and he takes, you know, does he listen to everything they say? No. But when they come to him and they say, "Hey, look, this is the way the team is feeling," Bill listens to that. And so I think you could be a disciplined guy and still be a player's coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Wade Phillips seems to be lacking in the discipline.
I think it has,
and a lot of guys like that.
And I think a lot of it has to do with fairness. If a coach is a disciplinarian with everybody, then you know that he's not just blowing smoke at you.
That's right.
You know, if he treats the superstars, if he treated Brady and Moss and those guys differently than, you know, for any sort of transgression they might have, it wouldn't play well. It wouldn't sit well with the other players. But they all know that he'll curse them out just as easily as he'll curse the rookie free agent out if he does something stupid. So I think a lot of it has to do with if a coach is a disciplinarian, but if he's fair, I think that gains a lot of respect from the players.
Let's see. John from South Carolina writes in, "Lately we have seen Eric realize there is an opposite sex. At the same time, his anger has gotten the better of him a few times. Guys, this is making me nervous. I'm afraid Eric is on steroids. Is he roid raging? Are you on steroids?"
Does it look like I'm on steroids, Fred?
Well, it affects.
I'm 145 people. Pounds.
You lean muscle. You could have.
I am. That
I think
that
it was 151 at the hall.
I did. I had full clothes on.
Oh, okay.
You know.
I kid Eric, writer for PFW Patriots Football Weekly, because he is here, and the Pats have made no transactions. Seriously, I was thinking about our outside linebacker position. Do you think the Patriots made the decision to trade Vrabel before the end of last season? I've been watching some of the games from last season, and it seemed like he was either out of position or he could not get to his spot on time. Of course, that is based on my vast football knowledge accumulated from sitting on a couch watching TV. Keep in mind, I love Vrabel, and I think we will miss him, but I have said that about Martin, Law, Brown, Branch, etc.
Do we think he made the decision before the end
the
of the season?
The Patriots made the decision that this is going to be it for
him. I don't think that, no. I think they worry about the season during the season, and then they worry about next season when that season ends.
Now, I think that when they do their self-evaluation, Fred, when the season's over, they look at his production and maybe say, is it worth whatever it was, $4 million on the cap or whatever that, and they might look at it there. But I think certainly if it was a more cost-effective solution, they would rather have Mike Vrabel on the team right now than not. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, right now, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mike in Charlotte, North Carolina. Whoever said that Vinatieri won the Super Bowls is nuts. The kicker makes one play, the only play he's paid to make. Brady has to make 8 to 10 plays to get them into field goal range in both of those Super Bowls. I have always thought the Pats made the right move in getting rid of him since he could not kick off past the 20-yard line. No, that was a huge liability having teams starting at the 30-35, especially with Bill, a big field position guy. I think Bill was always irritated by his kickoffs.
You know what? That half of that point is true. At towards the end of his Patriots career, his kickoffs were a little bit shorter.
But not to the 20-yard line.
Actually, you know what?
And their kick coverage today is not as good as it was when he was the kicker.
And the other fallacy about him is when he first started, his kickoffs might have been a little short. But then he got really good, where all his kickoffs, he wasn't getting touchbacks. But they were down to the 1 yard line consistently.
But I was going to say, when he left here and went to the Colts, his kickoffs, I mean, part of it is that he was in a dome, but his kickoffs haven't been that, as bad.
Now, having said that, it was time for him to go.
But financially, it was time for him to go, absolutely. And the fact that you got a Pro Bowler to replace him,
sure,
has made it a home run.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. Made it the right move.
If they drafted Scott Sisson again, it would have been a disaster.
Well, they had Robbie Gould, too.
Because they can replace these guys, that's the difference. But he wasn't kicking off to the 20-yard line, and their kick coverage was outstanding back in those Super Bowl days. And it hasn't been outstanding in the last couple of years.
That's why Brad Seeley's not here.
That's one of the reasons.
Yeah. Nick in Dallas, thanks for keeping the flame burning during quiet time. Few questions I'd like to get your thoughts on. One, do you see Chung planted in the starting lineup come midseason, possibly supplanting Merriweather or Sanders?
I don't think he necessarily supplants anybody, but I think
he'll play a lot. But I don't see him starting at this point.
Okay, let me ask it a different way then.
He's better than one of those guys?
By midseason, will you be saying he's going to be better?
We
haven't seen him
do
anything.
I said by midseason.
But
how do I make an accurate assessment
of that? I've never seen the kid play.
I know, but anyone can do it.
I don't think Merriweather is that good. So if you're asking me if I think this guy is better than Merriweather, yeah, chances are he probably is.
Could be.
They were drafted around the same spot.
Yep.
So, yeah. I don't think that much of Merriweather. I think Sanders is rock solid.
I do too.
Do you see any additional pieces being added to the offense or defense prior to training camp? Could we see another receiver or possibly outside linebacker defensive end added? If so, any predictions?
It's a stretch, but I don't think anyone's picked up Matt Jones yet, and I think that's a...
No way.
If there's going to be any addition on
tight
offense...
End?
No, he's a wide receiver, but he had cocaine problems.
Oh,
and
the big guy?
Yeah, from Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
Oh,
he was
a
quarterback at Arkansas.
He
and
couldn't
then
catch.
Yeah.
I think he's got so many things working against him.
He's got a lot of things working against him. He's big, and he does have some talent, but I really think it's a stretch. He's the only one I could see on offense that any possibility would be at that position.
I do think wide receiver is not very deep.
Right.
You know, Plaxico Burress is out there, too, but with his problems, I don't see that happening either.
Makes sense to take a chance on a guy like that to be your fourth or fifth receiver.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think that you're pretty set with your top three.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it makes sense to go out and get a Matt Jones, you know, for a depth piece. Is that worth it?
Nope.
No, I don't think it. That's why I said it's a stretch.
But I do think they need NFL wide receivers. After Greg Lewis, they don't have any.
Yeah, Sam Aiken. Does Edelman make the 53-man roster? What are your thoughts on seeing him in a wide receiver wildcat role come September?
I see him on the practice squad.
Yeah, I do too, unless what we just talked about is overwhelming. They're just so thin, they feel like they can afford to do that. I think that's a practice squad position.
And finally, any chance Brandon Tate makes it into the Patriots lineup this year, or is he totally bound for injured reserve?
No, I think there's a chance.
Yeah, he
could
go on PUP.
PUP, and then if he's ready to go, you know, somewhere around week 9, week 10, sure.
I would think it'd be a lot like Willis McGahee, where for the most part, you're not going to see him until next year.
All right, it's 1:40. Let's take a break. When we come back, Mike from Puerto Rico's on the phone.
For pride, honor, and victory, the time has come to defend our trophy. Superliga 2009, the rivalry continues. New England Revolution versus Atlas, Sunday, June 28th, 4:30 p.m. at Gillette Stadium. For tickets, call 1-877-GET-REVS or go to revolutionsoccer.net.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
In a summer filled with concerts, one band will light the sky like no other.
For the first time ever outdoors in New England, Gillette Stadium proudly welcomes AC/DC. Live in concert, July 28th. AC/DC. July 28th, Gillette Stadium. Tickets are on sale now for AC/DC at Ticketmaster.com, the Gillette Stadium box office, or 1-800-745-3000. The one concert you cannot miss. AC/DC at Gillette Stadium. Presented by Live Nation.
And now, fun facts from Fred Kirsch.
Well, there's two times to judge a schedule. Beginning of the season and at the end of the season. Judging your schedule at the end of the season always comes out more accurate because now you know how good these teams actually were.
And this is the guy who's expert indispensable.
That was a fun fact from Fred Kirsch.
I love how you shout, fun fact. Gets me every time.
All right, back to the emails and phone calls. On the phone right now, 508-543-7482, is Mike in Puerto Rico. Mike, how you doing?
Buenas tardes, everybody.
Buenas tardes.
How you guys doing? Everything okay?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, fine. It's a little warm in here. So,
Fred's older. Fred's a year older today.
Really? Congratulations, Fred.
Well, it's a cumulative. Over the last 365 days, I became a year old.
Okay. Feliz cumpleaños, then. A couple of things.
Is that an
insult? I don't know if you guys found out that actually Sean Springs isn't the only kryptonite for Terrell Owens.
Who else is?
You didn't see the show Superstars with that supermodel that just took him to task?
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
I saw it.
Did you?
That was unbelievable.
She just told him to shut up.
What did she do? I don't know.
She was, like, going through the obstacle course or whatever. She couldn't do anything. She was dropping F-bombs left and right. She comes off. She's done. She goes over. T.O. says something to her. All right, we got to get ready. And she just, like, dropped an F-bomb on him and told him to shut up.
She basically told him, and I can't believe you get paid millions of dollars and you call yourself a professional athlete and stuff like that. Because he got caught in a cargo net as part of an obstacle course. And it was unbelievable. The expression on her face and on his face, it was something that, I mean, I just got a deep T-boat, and I'm not ever erasing that, to be honest with you, because it was
really
so freaking cool.
Now,
T.O. got eliminated, right? He was the first athlete to get eliminated?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, he was. And you could see all the other athletes. None of them are active, except I think it's Bodie Miller, which is like a skier or something like that.
Right.
But none of the other athletes are even active. They're either retired or you know, on their twilight of their careers. But to get a couple of more things in before, did you guys see that, have you been following that show on Spike called Fourth and Long about football?
The Michael Irvin show?
No.
Is that the Michael Irvin thing with training camp for the Cowboys? The winner gets to go to the training camp?
No. Correct.
Yeah, I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it. It's on HBO. I don't think I get HBO.
No, it's on Spike.
Or Spike. Well, I get that, but I don't watch it.
It's very interesting.
Eric doesn't watch Spike. It's lowbrow.
Oh. But there's a particular, like, a wide receiver out there. He's like 6'3". His name is, I think it's James Holly. And he played in North Carolina. So, basically, I mean, we just got a wide receiver from North Carolina who actually was sat down in front of this receiver. And this guy's pretty good. I suggest you take a look at it. I think it's James Holly or Michael Holly or something of the sort. So it's pretty cool. And I was wondering if any of you guys were any of you guys were actually following it. So, basically that's all I got. Oh, and one more thing: the debate. I don't know when you guys had it. The whole thing about either Brady retiring after the perfect season or a couple of more Super Bowls.
Yeah, the great debate. No, that wasn't the debate. It was either you go 19-0 and Brady retires, or you have Brady for 10 more years.
That was by far and away, and I'm taking everything into context. ESPN, PFW, everything that I've heard, everything that I've read, that was by far the most intelligent and entertaining football conversation I've ever been a part of.
Well, that's amazing. I you know,
it is amazing. We got to get you out there more.
No. But seriously, you never know when, you know, something like that will happen. And it was a great question by Scott and Brockton. And really, I guess it's true. I think that the only answer is 19-0. But
yeah, see, I don't.
There's obviously,
I'm way more on the fence about
there's
this.
There obviously has to be another side to that, or else it wouldn't be such a great question.
Yeah. Right.
Do you consider putting that like up to a vote for the fans or something like that? Because that was absolutely
maybe
amazing.
Maybe we'll do it Friday. Maybe we'll do it for debate Friday.
Yeah,
maybe. Eric, maybe we'll
but
do,
it was great.
You know, maybe we'll.
Oh, but
we'll
we
do
both
it.
Agree.
No, but we'll talk. We'll write about what we think, and we'll put like Fred says. We'll put it up for a vote.
You can write for Andy. You know his argument.
Yeah.
But be honest, guys. Were there any hard feelings after the whole exchange?
No. We've
no.
had worse.
Okay.
We've
oh,
had
God,
worse,
no.
more meaningful exchanges with no
and
hard feelings.
And I can
feelings.
Honestly say this:
there really never are.
The only one that gets upset here is Paul.
But have you ever had any hard feelings?
He's an angry man.
Well,
so
you get upset. Sometimes.
See, that's more what I'm looking for.
You've been upset before.
But never had hard feelings ever since Brian left.
Well, that's true.
But that was great. I mean, keep it up, guys. You guys are doing an excellent job, and especially through the dead season now. So thanks for everything, and vayan con Dios.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks,
Michael.
Con Dios.
All right.
Happy birthday.
No, that's go with God.
Yeah,
no.
It's
go with
Feliz
God.
Cumpleaños is happy birthday.
Yeah.
You know I don't speak Spanish.
Feliz.
In English, please.
Feliz is happy. Cumpleaños is birthday.
Like Feliz Navidad.
That's Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas and Eric sucks.
No, that's not what that says.
Is that what it, no.
No.
All right. Web radio at Patriots.com. Let's see. Who is this? Is this Ferreira sucks. Merry Christmas. Aaron from Sterling, Virginia. Great show on Tuesday. Here are some quick over-unders and pick one games. Over-under. Number of 2010 Pro Bowl Patriots this year. 3.5.
Over.
Over.
Yeah, I'll go over.
Number of team interceptions in 09, 19.5. I'll say over. I'm going to say over.
19 team interceptions.
I'm going to say over.
I'll go under, but not by much.
I'll say over.
Did you see the picture of Kevin Kennedy in the dugout? If he had his pants any more higher up, you'd have to take his zipper down to eat. You got to see if they show Kennedy in the dugout again. Let's see. Number of phone calls from PR regarding this week's show, 2.5.
Under.
So far, anyway. Rushing yards gained by the Patriots' top runner this season, 999.5. Over.
I'm going to say
over.
I'm going to say under by one person, the top rusher.
Right, top
I'm
going to
say under because it's going to be distributed.
I understand.
Evenly.
You don't have to explain. I understand. Things popping up here. I have a meeting at 2.
Things are popping up.
But I told him I'd be 10 minutes late. Number of 1,000-yard receivers in the Pats this season, 1.5.
Under.
It's hard to get 2 on the same team.
I'm going
to
go over, though.
Okay.
I'll say there'll be 2.
Number of kids at Hanover Middle School who no longer dream of being a sports writer, 8.5.
Over.
Much, way, way over.
It's under because none of them aspire to that to begin with. So.
And now they certainly don't want to do it. Pick one, Brewski injured after the first game of the season or Moss injured after the first game of the season?
Brewski.
Well, you don't want either one.
No, but yeah, if you have to have one.
I know what, yeah. I don't like
it. I think what he's saying is which situation would make the Pats worse off.
I leave the rooting for injuries talk to Fred.
I think they'd be worse off if Moss got injured. Obviously. So I'll say Brewski.
Yeah. Pick one. Harrison comes out of retirement and joins the Pats, or Seo rejoins the Pats. I'd pick Harrison.
Oh, no, I would pick Seo.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Rodney's done.
Okay.
Plus, I don't like when players say they're done and then they come back.
I understand.
So I want
well,
him to
I, well,
stay.
I don't want. I wouldn't.
This is the question.
You know what? I didn't even take the fact that it would upset Eric into consideration when I I brashly just gave my answer without thinking.
Okay. Final
I agree
one.
With your answer.
Final either or. Pats go 19-0 in 09, but you are guaranteed to work with Andy for the next 10 years. Or Pats lose the Super Bowl. Andy announces his retirement from PFW and is replaced by Christina Acra.
I'll take the latter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Serious?
Sure.
Do we have anything to discuss there?
I don't think there's very few scenarios where
I could come here instead of looking across the table and seeing Andy, I saw Christina Acra, I'd show up at 10 o'clock. Just to get ready.
Cherry
pie? Supposed to be here at 9?
No, I'm talking about for the show.
I was like, why do I get made fun of every day?
For the show. Not for, you know, I'm
you
here.
Would do show prep?
Yeah. You know.
I wouldn't want to see you do show prep.
Nice show prep.
In that case.
Alejandro says, Tuesday's show was very enjoyable. You should do more without Andy. Anyway, I choose 19-0, but I want to make clear 2 points. My main interest is to get rid of those stupid cork poppers in South Florida, not to become one of them.
cork poppers. I like that.
With another undefeated season in NFL history, you wouldn't have to hear from them year in and year out. 2, if by some reason Santi Samuel had held on to that interception, or if Manning had gone down, or if David Tyree's helmet had respected the laws of physics, I would still think that the 04 Patriots were a better team. Wow.
Oh. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. The 04 team was defensively and on offense. The ground game was just punishing. If I remember correctly, Brady only threw 200-300-yard games, and no game was won on a last-minute score. I'm not counting Vanderjagt's missed field goal, even though that game was won on the next-to-last play. But, yes, record-wise, the 2017 would be unmatched. But, hey, record-wise, the 04 Steelers were better, yet they were home dogs in the AFC Championship game. The 07 Pats were dominant in the first half of the season, but ran out of gas. They had their hands full with the Colts and Giants and got really lucky against the Eagles and Ravens, both of which were quarterbacked by backups. In conclusion, my main contention is that another undefeated season in the Super Bowl era would help to put more perspective in the greatest team ever debate. For instance, for what I've read, I believe the 73 Dolphins were superior than the 72 squad.
I've heard people say that before.
Yeah, that might be. And I wouldn't just use the records. I don't understand why it's more impressive to run the ball and be dominant on the ground than it is to do what the Patriots
right.
did in
it's 07. Like Andy's argument when I beat him in one-on-one. He thinks it's not a good win because I hit outside shots.
Yeah, I don't.
It's still
don't,
part of the game.
Still, you still won.
Yeah, whether you're dominant in the air or dominant
and
on the ground.
Dominant. And I also think, and Eric brought this up yesterday with one specific game, that Cincinnati game from Maroney back that year. I think it was that year. I think the Patriots could have lined up and played that way, too, and beat you.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a – you know, listen, when you're throwing the ball all over the place and setting records, why should you change? I mean, I agree with the element that they ran out of gas a little bit. I don't think there were really an inordinate amount more close games in 07 than there were in 04. I think, you know, are we forgetting those games against, like, the Jets, the 13-7 game?
Houston Texans?
That wasn't that. That was 03. They had a lot of close games in 03. Yeah. You know, they had a 35-28 game here against Cincinnati in 04 that, you know, if Palmer didn't
against
get hurt,
Carson
they
Palmer,
may have lost.
Right.
I think the 04 team was great. And because of what they did, you know, because they won the Super Bowl and 07 didn't, I would consider the 04 team the best. But if the 17 did what they were supposed to do
in
Arizona, I mean, I have a hard time saying that that 04 team was better.
The 04 defense was
the
04 clearly
defense
better.
Was far superior. But
not as a whole overall
the
07 team.
Offense, I think, could have beat. They could have lined up with two tight ends and two backs and pounded it down people's throats and won that way, too, if they wanted to.
Yep.
Kevin says that somebody's mumbling or too far from the mic. Get closer. I can't hear you. I don't know who that is. Which one of us would it be? Probably Eric. Are you mumbling over there?
I watched
Eric?
This whole stupid game and I missed the game-winning home run by Troy O'Leary.
I think you've seen it before, though, Paul.
Anyway.
It happened about 12
I was
years
working
ago.
That night.
Sandeep is back. Remember Sandeep?
Sandeep
from Herndon, Virginia? As a result of the new wedge rule, There will be fewer linemen playing on special teams and more linebacker tight end types, guys big, strong, fast. The Pats have carried as many as 11 linebackers. How many do you see making the roster? To me, Mayo, Bruschi, Guyton, Thomas, Woods, Crable, and the guy from Detroit are locks to make the roster.
That's seven?
Let's see.
Can you read them slower?
Mayo, Bruschi, Guyton, Thomas, Woods, and Crable, and Lennon.
That's seven, yeah.
Remember 2003, everybody seemed worried about who would play nose tackle, and the Pats pulled off a trade with the Bears to land Ted Washington almost halfway into training camp. Do you see Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots, making a similar move to get a linebacker?
Yeah, if there's one available, I don't know.
There are very few of them available now that could fill that.
Well, you didn't
know
that Ted Washington was available when they traded for him.
It was rumored to be. I mean, it wasn't rumored to be coming to the Patriots, but he was rumored to be available. And Derek Burgess has been rumored to be available. Mm-hmm. Maybe they you know, swing a trade for him at some point during training camp. Yeah, no, I wouldn't rule that out. I think Bill has made acquisitions in the summer and made them well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's always a chance of something like that happening. Sure. I don't think they'll keep any more linebackers than in the past. Did he say 11 linebackers they've kept in the past?
Yeah.
I don't remember they've ever kept that many. I'm not saying they didn't. I just don't remember them.
Yeah, I don't either.
Keeping that many on the opening day roster, but I don't think that that rule is going to affect much because most teams only keep eight linemen, offensive linemen. You know, for as a rule, I think you might see a guy like Stephen Neal, who is or Mark Lavoie, who has served in that role in that wedge in the past. Maybe that guy comes out now, but. Like Mike Wright has been in that role.
I see him staying
in a role like that because he moves well.
Yeah.
And certainly if they're going to keep four tight ends.
Yeah, I think
might see a tight end
more
back,
likely. Yep.
You know, back there and stuff. I think it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds. I think right now that you know how you said that, like, when the NFL Network guys, everybody's trying to be cute and different.
Right.
I think that talk of the wedge is the football writer's attempt to be a little bit, I'm cerebral.
Right.
I know this. I don't think that's going to be a sweeping change to the game.
Yeah,
I mean, I know it's a player safety issue for the NFL,
exactly.
And I applaud them for that.
Right.
I don't think it's going to change a whole lot in terms of how they go about doing it.
Yeah, that wasn't a rule like, you know, cracking down on pass interference or not allowing defensive players to touch a guy 5 yards out. That's obviously to free up the offense a little bit. This isn't to create more touchdowns on kickoffs. This is, like Paul said, a safety issue.
Yeah, but I mean, the emailer is right. That's what everybody's writing about. Oh, the three-man wedge is going to take away the lineman and this. I don't think it's going to be this widespread. A guy's going to obviously not be there. They're going to have to find different ways to set up their blocking schemes. Maybe they put two to the left and two to the right now. I don't know. You might see some different kinds of schemes in terms of their return, the return patterns and stuff like that. But I don't think a guy who may have been a candidate to do that role in the past will not be now because there's one less guy allowed in the wedge. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
If you had four offensive linemen in your wedge and now you're only allowed to have three, why are you not going to be able to have a lineman back there, but you have to have a linebacker and tight end back there? That seems to be the leap that everybody's making because they're a little bit quicker and I suppose they're guessing it's more space for these guys to operate
in. It's going to be all about quickness, you know.
But I think if you were a lineman that had the quickness to do that with a four-man wedge, your alignment was the quickness.
Probably.
You know, like Stephen Neal is very athletic.
Oh, yeah.
An offensive lineman.
Right. That's why he's always out.
That's why he's out there.
And that's why most of the time when they pull – you know, obviously the guards are the ones that do that, although New England has a tendency to pull tackles too.
Oh, yeah. They have a lot of offensive linemen that move well and have good feet.
But they wouldn't put their O-linemen out there if they couldn't do that job.
I don't think.
On special
teams. Maybe I'm wrong. And part of it may be just a result of there's a new coach here, and he's got different ways of doing things.
Yeah, that's.
You know, Scott O'Brien is not Brad Seeley. Maybe his schemes are all different than what Brad did. We've already seen some of the drills they do are different than anything we ever saw with Brad here.
Right.
So we'll find out what the schemes are like. But I definitely have been reading some technical football stuff from some of these guys, and that seems to be the leap that everybody's making. I'm not willing to think it's going to be as widespread of a change as everybody else does.
All right. Well, that's going to be it. As usual, Paul gets the last word. We'll be back next week with another week of PFW in Progress. We'll see you next Tuesday.
That'll do it. Another PFW in progress. We'll be back next week.
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah, God, yeah!
Patriots.com Radio.